For more than a decade, Saturdays and Illegal Curve have been synonymous with one another, with insight, analysis, and interviews regarding the Winnipeg Jets, the Manitoba Moose, and all around the NHL. Here are Dave Minuk, Ezra Ginsberg, and your host, Drew Mandel. The Illegal Curve Hockey Show starts now.
Good morning, Winnipeg. Good morning, Manitoba. And for all those joining us live on YouTube and all of our social media platforms, we say good morning, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show with Dave Minuk, with Ezra Ginsberg. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, here for the next couple of hours, looking back at last night's Jets victory over the New York Rangers, looking ahead to Monday's game in Dallas against the Stars, also touch on the midweek games as well as the Jets venture out west to meet the defending Stanley Cup champion, Colorado Avalanche, and the always entertaining and sometimes enigmatic Vegas Golden Knights over the course of the next few games. Gentlemen, good to see you both. It's been a mere, 11 hours, but it's nice to see that you guys are looking bright-eyed and bushy-tailed on this Saturday morning. There you go, Dave. Open those eyes nice and wide. Clockwork Orange style there.
What's the over-under, boys, on how many times we're going to say it's only one game? I'm going to put the over-under at maybe 10. But it was obviously a big victory, big opening night victory for the Jets. We talked about broke all the goals down and everything like that. But as you mentioned, Drew, you know, you've got Dallas coming up, and that's one of those teams that you're going to be battling with all season long for one of those four or five Central Division playoff spots. And then, you know, Colorado, Vegas. I mean, I was saying this last week, and it seemed like, you know, a lot of people weren't sure, you know, how Vegas was going to do this year with the tandem of Logan Thompson and Aiden Hill, because obviously Robin Leonard is not going to be playing at all this year, but they're 2-0 to start the season. And obviously, you know, you don't want to get too excited about two games either, but you know, when you've got a healthy Mark Stone and you've got a healthy Alex Pietrangelo, we know all the firepower that they have. You know, they're a tough team to beat. So yeah, great opening night victory, but you don't have too long to, you know, pat yourselves on the back. You got to get back to practice and keep going, right?
And they will be practicing later on this afternoon. I believe 12 noon is practice, which I believe would be at the Iceplex with the Moose home opener happening as well this afternoon. Dave M., correct me if I'm incorrect in any of my assumptions.
Nope, nothing to correct, Drew. You are 100% accurate. The Jets will be practicing out at the Iceplex. So if folks want to go and watch them, they can at 12 noon. And if they want to watch the Manitoba Moose, they can go do that as well. That's at 2 p.m. downtown Winnipeg. We already gave away our... We have a four tickets for today's this afternoon's home opener. We gave them away to someone who was watching the post game show last night. So remember, the Illegal Curve Zone
gets the worm.
The early bird gets the worm, but the Illegal Curve Zone is hot and it's ready to go. And you can always get four tickets. And these tickets we're not putting you in the nosebleeds. We're putting you right up against the glass. So good seats for the watch these young prospects. And there's a lot of them. And we'll talk about it a little bit later, but there's a lot of young kids that you're going to be able to watch, and this should be a very exciting Manitoba Moose club, at least to start. I mean, you never know, of course, what's going to happen with the Jets, but should be a lot of fun. And yeah, no, I mean, it's look, it was just one game.
twice now.
Does Ezzy's just one game count as a just one game, or is that kind of like setting
it? No, the first one doesn't count.
Okay,
no.
So that would be the first one.
Just one. Okay, fine. Yeah. The judges here are very. It's like the Jeopardy judges. You gotta consult with them if the answer was correct or not.
Right. Okay. No, I mean, look, it's. But I think the more important thing was that a lot of folks we had a great post game show. That's what I want to highlight. I just thought Ezzy and I were talking about it this morning before we came on, and it's just like it was. We haven't done it in a while, and it was just a lot of fun. We had fun doing that, doing the show, and people were having a great time. You know, I think there's always a lot more, you know, elation when the home side is won. So people were happy, and they weren't taking it just one game at a time. They were excited about it. That was good. The chat was lively, and of course, and one thing I love to see, and I said it after the show, love to see all the people participating in the Illegal Curve giveaway contest, which of course is giving away an authentic Heritage. We got more than just one authentic Heritage Classic jersey. We've got lots of different jerseys, but right now the first giveaway is an authentic Heritage Classic jersey. So if you go down into the description, and you just click that link.
Below us on the screen, you'll see a link right in the description of the show that you're watching. Click that link, and that's going to give you all the great access to entering. You know, you got to do, you know, these tasks that you're already basically doing.
Yeah.
So just keep filling out those tasks and you earn more ballots and more entries into the contest to win the jersey. We're going to draw that after Monday's game. So be sure to do that and then go back. And maybe if you missed the post game show last night, not sure where you possibly could have been, but maybe if you missed it, go back, watch yesterday's post game show. You might see a secret word at some point in time during the post game show that will allow you to get additional entries to win that great Heritage Classic jersey. So, you know, lots of fun in store for all of us over the course of this entire Jet season with giveaways galore, Tough Duck toques, Jets jerseys, Dave M's giving away Moose tickets. It's going to be a wild and woolly season here.
Drew, all I know is if there was an Olympic sport for talking with your hands, I think you would medal in that sport because the way you move those hands and you know, like it's like you're over here and you're doing circles and you're pointing. And I mean, I really do think you have a future.
Thank you. That's largely why I went to mime school. So, you know, mimes always communicate with their hands. So that's sort of now I'm combining my mime.
The final exam, how well you can do the box. I imagine you have to master the box. Like that's one of those things like, right.
It's also Vogue. I'm both voguing and trapped in a box at the same time. So, you know, it was a really unique school. It was about contemporary dance and mime all at once. So, I mean, definitely the kind of education that's going to take you places and certainly not take you onto a YouTube show with a couple other chuckles, every Saturday morning and after each and every Winnipeg Jets game. Let's get into it last night. Sorry, that was funny. Let's get into it last night. The Jets obviously 4-1 victors. Look, a win is a win. You get all, there's full marks for that. You're beating a very good New York Rangers team, a team that certainly is a Stanley Cup contender. You know, there's the asterisk attached to it and a small asterisk in that it was the Rangers were on the second half of a back-to-back. But I'll be honest, that's what happens. You know, that evens out over the course of the year. There's plenty of games where you're the team that's playing 3 and 4 nights against a team that's well rested. Jets don't have to apologize for that. They, you know, when it was 1-1 in that third period, the Rangers tied it up, Dryden Hunt getting that goal that we talked about last night. You know, it's 1-1. The game is there for the taking for the Rangers. And so what I was impressed by from the Jets is that they didn't lose their focus. They didn't try and win the game all, you know, in one play. They stayed within their structure, especially in that third period. And they played well in that third period, especially coming off that poor second period. As Ben Lawrence puts up on the screen there, he mentioning that second period was awful. It was, Ben. Nobody would say anything different. But the Jets...
Drew, I don't mean to interrupt you, but actually, I put it up on the screen.
I know Ben, you put it up on the screen, but it was Ben's comment. But the Jets, what impressed me about last night is that the Jets stayed in the game and didn't change their approach when they were probably feeling the nerves a little bit more in that third period.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you 100%, Drew, and it's only one game, but just kidding. You know, look, I mean, there's a lot of things that you like about that game, but there's no denying that the second period was not good. And I think, you know, I how many times, you know, we were only there for the first couple periods in the press box, but on several occasions I said to Dave, like, Artemi Panarin is, I don't care what anybody says, is a top 10 skilled player in the league, maybe even top 5. Like, and it wasn't just the breakaway goal. Like, Panarin is a guy that with his smarts and just his skill, speed, you know, stick handling, wizardry, everything like that, like, Panarin is just, he's a superstar. Mika Zibanejad, same thing. Like, Zibanejad is a legitimate superstar. Chris Kreider, don't think he's going to score 50 this year, but, you know, he's obviously a great goal scorer. And then you've got Alexi Lafreniere, Kapo Kakko. The back end is solid, led by Adam Fox, right? Like, Igor Shesterkin obviously didn't play last night, but Yaroslav Halak is a pretty decent backup. And I think he, you know, kept his team in the game, especially in the first period. When the Jets had some really good chances, right? Could have been a lot worse than 1-0. So, you know, I think when you look at this game, yeah, you're not going to say that, you know, this was a dominant effort by the Jets, but there were times when it was dominant, guys. Like, I think, you know, you saw how good Scheifele, Connor, and Ehlers could be, and you see that almost every time, you know, every game, not necessarily every shift. You know, we talked about the fourth line with Gagne, Gustafsson, and Manalainen, you know, connecting on the game-winning goal, but also just having, you know, an impact on the game throughout, getting regular shifts, playing, you know, 8 or 9 minutes, whatever it was, as opposed to, you know, 4 or 5 minutes, which we saw in previous years with the Jets, right? But I think probably at the top of my list, Dave, is Connor Hellebuck's play, right? Like, that was Hellebuck of old. That was the Hellebuck that you saw when he was winning the Vezina Trophy, you know, as a Vezina finalist. You don't want Connor Hellebuck to have to do that every single game, but he deserves a lot of credit for that win yesterday, because some of the saves that he was making were A-plus saves. I forget exactly how many he ended up with. I think he got up to 40, if I'm not mistaken. So he was excellent, and that's what you want to see, right? So, yeah, you only played probably 40 good minutes, 35 good minutes, but who cares? I mean, if the Jets lost, we'd be talking about how the Jets need to win against the Stars, because you don't want to fall behind, you know, 0-2, right? So I think overall the Jets have got to be pretty happy with – not pretty happy. I think they've got to be very happy beating a Rangers team that a lot of people think, you know, could go all the way this year.
Yeah. No question. Sorry.
I was just going to jump in and say, like, you know, to me the interesting thing is people are like, well, the Rangers played 3 out of 4. But if you want to look at it from a Jets perspective, they hadn't played a game in a week. You know, they had practiced, but they hadn't played a game since the Calgary game last Friday night. So the Jets have a long layoff that they've got to deal with. So there is going to be some rust element to their game, and their game might, you know, there might be a little bit of excitement in that first period that they're going. But, you know, by the second you're like, well, this is a little more consuming. And then all of a sudden you kind of get it back for the third. I'm not trying to make an excuse. I'm just saying, like, I think that's part of the equation you have to factor in when you're looking at last night's game. But in addition to Hellebuck, which we talked about, you know, extensively last night, I think the other things that we need to focus on, because you know, the first and I thought the second line actually worked pretty well as well. And I've said this all along, Cole Perfetti's vision is like A-plus, and he'll find his teammates. So he'll, you know, be a real good asset. I mean, Blake Wheeler's a facilitator as well. He almost too much a little bit yesterday. I mean, he was looking for passes when he had clear lanes to shoot. I thought a couple of times, especially in that first period where he had that kind of open window that Perfetti found him, and he tried to pass it rather than shoot. But you know, to me the key was actually the third line. I really liked Morgan Barron's play, and you wanted to see how he was going to look, you know, like I've talked about a lot, building on a really good playoffs with the Moose and having a really good summer, as we talked to him, you know, during our summer hiatus. And then you look at how is he going to mesh with that third line, and he looked like he was, you know, a perfect fit, a perfect complement for, you know, an Adam Lowry driven line. And then again, we talked about the fourth line. The fourth line needs to be highlighted as well, because too often in Jets 2.0 history, the fourth line has been just a complete waste of time. You know, there's so many guys who are just, you know, at the end of their careers, and they're not being given an opportunity. And we've said this, and I said this yesterday with respect to David Gustafson. You don't draft someone like that. You don't develop someone like that, and then you don't use him the way you need to use him, because it makes no sense. It's counterproductive, right? You're talking about, you develop this guy as a center in the AHL, develop him to play defense, you develop him to be on the PK. And then if you don't use any of those attributes, what the hell is he in the NHL for? Because that's what he's been developed for. So now you've got him in there. And like I said, he's not Andrew Kopp. I don't think he's Andrew Kopp. I don't think he has the same offense as Andrew Kopp, but I think he's defensively as responsible as Andrew Kopp. So I think you've got a player who, if you need to, could be up on that third line. But for now, I think he complements well with Manalainen and Gagner. So I think from a Jets perspective, what you really wanted to see yesterday was the fact that, you know what Hellebuck's going to be. You know Hellebuck is going to be Connor Hellebuck. Well, you don't know that 100%. We had a feeling that there was going to be a bounce back. New kid last year.
If he wasn't going to be Connor Hellebuck, then basically everything else doesn't matter.
Right, of course. But you don't apologize. Like I said about 100 times, you know, in the last few years, you don't apologize for having one of the best goaltenders in the NHL. That's just your reality. You drafted him, you developed him. So that's your right. That's your entitlement. But the truth is, if you think about it, so you've got a goaltender that looked fantastic. And again, it was just one game, but still he looked fantastic. And then, but you really want to see the balance of those lines and how they were going to work with each other. And like I said, it's early in the season, but I think it's really a good sign that the third and fourth lines were able to do more than just hold water.
And I got to say one thing too. And I realize, boys, you know, we've been doing the show for over 13 years, and we seem to, you know, bring this up, you know, every few months, but, you know, with size, you know, and it's tough to quantify, you know, the impact that size has on a outcome of a game, but like it's on display there, right? Like aside from Sam Gagner, it's all big boys in the bottom six, right? And the Jets have been criticized. Let's be honest. When it gets to the playoffs, more so on the back end, right? With, you know, Josh Morrissey, Neil Pionk. I mean, Morrissey and Pionk can handle themselves at their height. So I'm not saying that these guys can't handle themselves physically, but I'm just saying, like, you know, you guys have heard the criticism. We've all heard the criticism about the size being a factor. And when you're talking about, you know, Gustavsson, Mantalainen, Barron, Appleton, and Lowry, these are all large men, right? And they can skate. They can all skate. And that, to me, is, you know, something that also kind of stood out a little bit. Like, Logan Stanley struggled. We'll maybe get into that a little bit later. I wouldn't at all be surprised if Sandberg is in for Dallas, you know, in for Colorado, in for Vegas. We'll see what happens there. But, you know, this team was moving the puck. And that's a skating game. When you're playing the Rangers, that is a skating game. That is a very good skating team, a good possession team. Actually, at times they did struggle with possession, but I mean, it's a very skilled team, and their criticism last year was that they relied too much on Igor Shesterkin's wizardry. But when you're talking about Panarin and Zibanejad and, you know, all of these players, Lafreniere, Kapo Kakko, I mean, the list goes on, Kreider. I mean, there's a lot of dangerous weapons there. So the size for me really stood out, and you see it when you're watching these guys. And I think that's something, it's going to cause other teams, you know, you essentially have, I think, a couple of shutdown lines now. And not only shutdown lines, but you have two lines that I think can produce. And don't get me wrong, I don't think there's any 30 goal scorers here. Like, you know, I think at times these guys are going to struggle to score a little bit of goals, but I do like, as Dave mentioned, Morgan Barron, you know, he's a goal scorer, but he's also a guy that hustles and gets it on the forecheck and can throw his weight around. And then when you're talking about that fourth line, we saw they've already produced a goal, which in previous season, it seemed like, you know, the Jets were lucky to get a few goals throughout the course of a year from the fourth line. So I think even though, you know, we're going to, you know, pump the brakes a little bit, I think there's a lot to like about the makeup of the bottom six.
Well, to your point there, Ezzy, you know, is that the bottom six has an identity, and it's got, they know they need to play when they're on the ice. For so many years, the fourth line barely ever played, so it's impossible to get an identity when you don't play, and you know, and it was just sort of a mishmash of pieces that didn't necessarily fit together. They'd pluck a guy here, pluck a guy there, and hope that something good would come out of it. Now, again, it's only been one game, but at least you know what you're expecting out of each of those respective lines. You know what you're expecting out of the fourth line with Gustavsson and Mantalainen and with Gagne, and you know what the Lowry line is, you know, largely going to be asked to do and what their task is going to be. So, you know, from a player's perspective, I imagine it's a lot easier when you know what is expected of you and you're put into a position to succeed. You're not a square peg being pounded into a round hole. This fits. This is what I need to do. I'm going to execute it, and hopefully I'm going to succeed while doing it. That's sort of comforting, I would imagine, from both a player perspective and from a coaching perspective, Dave.
Well, I mean, let's be clear. The Jets haven't had a good fourth line since the GST line, which, you know, if it wasn't for Big Daddy down below, I mean, there wouldn't be a GST line. I mean, may have played a small role getting it going, of course, but, you know, I mean, Big Daddy's tweet was the one that got the true ball rolling. And of course, then I was just the vehicle that drove it a little bit further down the line to the, as I started bugging every media guy in the press box, I'm like, hey, this is the name of that line. Hey, this is the name of the line. Then once Dennis Bag dropped it on a Saturday night against the Leafs, we knew the GST was going to be something. The point is, the Jets need a fourth line, because we've said this for too long that you can't be a three-line team in the NHL and expect to win anything really of significance, because you're just burning out the horses. And look, I think Mark Scheifele was the only guy over 20 minutes last night. And he was barely.
He was 20.
I was just going to say, it was like just over 20 minutes.
Yeah. In terms of the forwards, he played the most minutes. You're absolutely right. Scheifele was 20 minutes and 8 seconds.
Right.
And he led all forwards, which is not a significant time on ice.
Right. So my point is that generally, if you remember last year, I mean, how many times was that 23, 24, 25 minutes? And it was too many minutes. And Blake Wheeler, don't you remember how many times we'd be like, why is Blake Wheeler playing 23 minutes a game? Don't get me wrong. The guy's still at 36 in fantastic shape. But the reality is, you don't need to keep doing that, because you're just, it's a long season. It's a slog, and to burn him out like that and to not use your fourth line is not really it's kind of coaching malpractice in my mind, because you're not effectively using your team. I mean, the reason why you're allowed to have 12 forwards is because you're supposed to use 12 forwards, not nine. It doesn't make a lot of sense. And I mean, like Rick Bonus said, when he was asked, in terms of, I think, I don't remember the exact context, but, you know, he said, if you're chasing the game, it makes sense that you're going to ride your guys a little, you know, your scoring guys a little bit more. But, you know, when you're in a game like that, and like you mentioned it a number of times last night on the broadcast, Drew, to be able to have the faith in a one-all game to use your fourth line and not have a lack of belief in their ability to either maintain or push back is detrimental to the team. And so when you do it, it's such a change. And like I said, you can make all the excuses you want, but the reality is that's what Scott Arneil, as the interim associate, was the associate coach already, interim head coach.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's what he chose to do. And I think he's choosing to do that because that's what the Rick Bowness led team is going to do here in Winnipeg. And that, from my perspective, is going to be a huge asset, not necessarily right off the hop, but I think down the road in, you know, the latter part of the season, when you're looking at a Jets team that, you know, you're going to need to rely on Mark Scheifele, you're going to need to rely on Nikolaj Ehlers, Kyle Connor. And as he said, you can go down the list of all these guys you're going to have to rely on. With them having played 3, 4, 5 minutes less per game collectively at the end of a, you know, in the 70 game mark, as you're trying to ramp up for a playoff run, I think to me that's going to really hold this Jets team in good stead. We don't know how it's going to look. We don't know what it's going to look like by game 20. It could look different. It could look like the top nine are being used and the last line isn't. But if they continue down this sort of road, I think it'll pay dividends at the end of the season and maybe in the playoffs.
You know what I find to be interesting is that as we were recapping last night's game, you know, the second line, that's the line that I thought that they had a pretty good game for three guys that I'm not sure, entering the season, that was sort of an area of not concern, because concern would be too strong a word, an area that I was paying particular attention to, because you know that Scheifele, Ehlers, and Connor are going to perform. There's no question about it. You know, and you know the role and what the expectations are of the third and fourth line, as we were just discussing. But that second line, you have Dubois, who's still sort of a younger player who's, I would say, you know, right, you know, close to his peak as an NHL player, because that's the age, you know, you don't peak at 29 anymore. You peak in your, you know, early to mid-20s. And then you got Wheeler.
Well, Drew, you peaked in high school, though.
Thank you. That's true. I did peak in high school, and it's been straight downhill since then. Very steep drop. You got Wheeler, and we know Wheeler is the grizzled veteran who is, obviously, you know, part of the changing of the guard here. And then you have Perfetti, this young guy who's really getting his first taste of regular NHL action, after last season was cut short due to the injury. So I wasn't sure how that second line was going to meld together. But the early returns last night, I thought, were pretty decent. I thought that they showed some chemistry. I mean, they didn't do anything, at 5-on-5 in terms of scoring. But I thought that they were pretty decent in controlling the play. There were opportunities. You remember the one where Wheeler passed when I think he should have shot when he was in a prime scoring zone in the high danger area. But, you know, so the second line, which to me was sort of had the question mark attached to it, had decent returns, at least through game one, from my perspective.
Yeah, absolutely. And I don't necessarily think I would say that, you know, that I would have a question mark right now, but I would say, you know, work in progress, which is obviously a huge cliche, but I still think we're, you know, waiting to see the best of that line, right? And as you mentioned, Drew, this is not a threesome or a triumvirate that we've seen, probably better word than threesome, a triumvirate that we've seen a lot, right? And I don't think Perfetti, I know because I checked, he wasn't credited with a shot on goal, but you're right. I mean, I think you'd like to, even though Perfetti's a guy that likes to set up plays, Dave, you want to make sure that, you know, he's also shooting the puck because he's got a great shot. And, you know, Pierre-Luc Dubois, as you mentioned, his incredible assist came on the power play, that beautiful pass to Scheifele. But you saw some moments and, you know, look at these guys are all skilled. They can all set up plays. And Wheeler's obviously not a shoot first type of player, but Dubois and Perfetti can shoot the puck. And, you know, this line can skate. And I think they do have a defensive conscience as well. So, I mean, even though Scheifele, Connor, Ehlers at this point is more advanced and that's your bona fide top line, I think that second line is going to be really good. But you definitely want to see a little bit more from that second line. But again, I mean, it's the first game of the season. And it's this type of road trip coming up, boys, where you have 3 games in 4 days and you're playing, you know, Central Division rivals and you're playing Vegas and you're playing good offensive teams. That's when, you know, the second line is really going to be relied on. When you're talking about a game in which clearly, you know, Scheifele, Connor, Ehlers were doing the majority of the damage, And the fourth line, we should throw that in there as well. I mean, you know, there wasn't as much pressure on the second line, but that's going to ramp up when you need all your scoring lines going, as we've talked about. So, yeah, I liked what I saw, Drew, but, you know, we're still not even close to, I think, the pinnacle of what that line can do.
No, especially because that second line, you know, if they're not clicking, there's not really somebody else from the bottom of the lineup who's ready-made to step in there, Dave, quickly, before we bring in Dan Robertson. So that second line really needs to be productive, and it needs to find that chemistry sort of quicker than you might necessarily expect from the Jets' perspective.
Yeah, I don't think there's any question. I mean, as you said, you're not pressing the panic button because one game they didn't produce. Well, but you know, you're going to have a little bit of rope with those guys, especially if you're winning. You know, if you can win games without having them as they gain that chemistry, then you're less likely to try and, you know, mix things up because you're not necessarily tightening, you know, holding your sticks a little bit tighter because you're in a losing streak. So I think if they continue to win, it's good for this Jets club, of course, because it'll allow them to develop that chemistry over the next couple of practices and games, and then you'll see what that line can do. But I agree. I think it is one that can be very effective and produce for this Winnipeg Jets club.
We've seen Dan Robertson on the broadcast so far. We'll get to see Dan Robertson on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show up next. Get to meet Dan a little bit more, get to talk to him a little bit about, you know, himself as a broadcaster, and of course the Jets as well. Don't go anywhere. Dan Robertson, Winnipeg Jets play-by-play man, is up next. It's Saturday morning. You're watching the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on YouTube. We're live on all of our social media platforms. Bottom of hour number one. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. I'm your host, Drew Mindell. Dave Minook's in the top right, Ezra Ginsberg in the bottom right, Dan Robertson, Winnipeg Jets broadcaster, in the bottom left. Dan, I just saw your text. Can you hear us? Let's start with that.
Guys, I can't hear you.
You cannot hear us. Okay, that is...
Sorry.
That's a little
I don't
weird.
Know what's going on here.
No worries. Maybe
it's better if Dan doesn't hear us, Drew.
That's true. You could just do the... You can do the interview. Yeah. Just pretend we're asking you questions, Dan. There you go. Dan's going to work on his technical... technical difficulties being experienced, but we're thrilled to have him on. It's always the headphones' fault. That's the way it always works.
It's obviously not Dan's fault. It's the computer or the headphones, as you mentioned, Drew. But I really do think this interview would probably go better if Dan doesn't hear us and he just gives us his thoughts on the Jets game.
I would agree with that, Mr. Ginsberg. Let's see if we'll get Dan. Dan's going to give us a thumbs up when he's ready. In any event, we're thrilled to have Dan on joining us here.
We could just write our questions in the scrolling bar, and then Dan can answer them that way.
That could work as well. Any luck, Dan? Well, it doesn't look like any luck just yet.
That's okay. You want to take him out and then reset it, or
maybe we'll do that. The technical difficulties are the same on. Sometimes they're on radio, sometimes they're on YouTube, sometimes they're on television. You know how it works in this day and age, unfortunately. Maybe without the headphones, it might be better, Dan. I don't know if that helps.
Yeah, hold on. Unmute him though. He's muted.
I'm gonna unmute yourself, and then we should be good to go, I think.
Okay. How about now?
Now we can hear you, Dan.
Sorry about all along.
Welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. How are you doing on this Saturday morning?
A little bit of stress there, but sorry about that. I got it figured out. Everything's good with me.
That's good, Dan.
Perfect. We appreciate you joining us. Welcome to the show. We had you on years ago when you were still with the Habs, and we were on terrestrial radio, that old-fashioned technology. But we're thrilled to welcome you here for the first time as the Winnipeg Jets play-by-play broadcaster. You know, first game last night. We'll get into it. But, you know, I wanted to ask you, you know, first and foremost, Dan, you know, you come to this role here in Winnipeg having done Habs games on the radio. You know, what's the biggest change, the biggest difference in doing games on the radio versus doing games on television? And, you know, the pros and cons from your perspective of each.
Well, you have to remember you're calling TV games that what I can see, the viewers can see, and that's not the case in radio. So I think you have to be a little more economical with your words when you're calling games on TV. Like, I don't have to say that Shifley has the puck on the right wing coming through the neutral zone. On TV, it's not wrong, but you have to say it in radio. And I remember when I started in radio in 2014, I was coming from 12 years of like junior hockey and university hockey and that sort of thing. And my boss about a week in said, you have to be more descriptive. People can't see what you can see. And I thought, yeah, you're right. So I kind of programmed myself that way. Now I'm trying to deprogram myself. I try not to think about it too much because, as I said, if you're over descriptive, it's not the end of the world, but that's not really the way I want to be.
You mentioned junior hockey, and I mean, I know that, you know, those of us in Winnipeg, you know, we are familiar with Dennis Bayak and his background, you know, obviously being from Manitoba and everything else. Where did you get your start? You mentioned junior hockey. You did junior hockey like so many people working their way up the ranks. So where did you get your start before you got your opportunity in Montreal?
Well, it would have been in Halifax. I went to broadcasting school when I was like 22. And then I worked in radio news for a while in a small town in Nova Scotia. Then I ended up moving to Colorado, got married. And then came back and basically went to a cable TV station called Eastlink and had a good chat with the boss. And he had me doing color commentary for Halifax Mooseheads games. So here I was, you know, I mean, it was me doing color. Like, why would that happen? But that evolved into doing play-by-play. So 1 year, it was the year that Corey Crawford was a 16-year-old with the Moncton Wildcats. I did road games for them. I just basically did whatever I could to get experience and because I liked it. So I stayed with Eastlink for about 12 years. I did QMJHL. I called Nikolai Ehlers. My last year calling Q games was his first year in Halifax. But I did university hockey. I mean, everything. Midget, junior A. I did football, soccer, which I never understood and I still don't, but I did it. And football and basketball. So I had a lot of experience in different areas by the time I got to Montreal.
Well, Dan, sticking with Nick Ehlers there, you mentioned that you were broadcasting his last your last season with the Halifax Mooseheads, and he was clearly, you know, in fine form yesterday on the line with Scheifele and Connor. And, you know, last year when Ehlers missed 19 games, the season really fell apart, especially offensively. But how, you know, how satisfying or how, you know, it must be neat for you to come back to Winnipeg and you would know Nikolai Ehlers, you know, better than others, having, you know, covered him since the junior days. But what kind of has stood out to you, you know, in the short time with the Jets for TSN about Ehlers? Because obviously Ehlers is a guy that everyone is always expecting big things of offensively. And this year, as you know, PP1, everything like that, everyone's kind of maybe expecting Ehlers to have a career year this year.
Yeah, you know, ever since I first saw him, his edge work blew me away. I mean, the way he can turn and in a league where, I mean, there's a lot of great skaters, obviously, it's the NHL, and he's, I don't know where I'd rank him, but he's electrifying. He turned it on down the right wing last night and just blew by the defenseman and was in alone, and not everybody can do that. So I'm, obviously, I hope he plays 82 games or close to that, and that's a dynamic. Kevin Sawyer said it best last night. That's a dynamic first line, and they could cause some problems. So it's, and again, I'm learning on the fly. I didn't watch a lot of Jets hockey over the years just because I was more concentrated on my own thing. But just to see him, I think he's probably getting to an age where, and they talk about everybody having to lead. I think he can lead in his own way. He's a quiet guy, but I think that'll be driven by his play on the ice. He can lead that way. So, you know, I would never want, and I know you're not asking me to put a number on points or how many goals he might score, but man, he's electrifying, and I hope for the best for him. It's funny, when he came to the Quebec League, when he went to Halifax, his dad was a coach, and that was Cam Russell's the GM in Halifax, and that was, and I know I'm going back a ways, but you could see right away sort of that he was well taught, and you could tell this guy was going to be certainly a pro, if not a star. And I still think there's a lot of room to grow for him. And I mean that in a good way. Like he's got something there. So it's going to be fun to watch those guys. I hope they stay together all year.
Scary thought about Nikolai Ehlers still having room to grow, but I agree. Dan Robertson, Winnipeg Jets broadcaster, is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturday morning, we're live on YouTube. We're live on all of our social media platforms.
You know, Dan, the news of your announcement got going on Twitter, and suddenly you found yourself with all these Manitoba followers from Twitter. But what's it been like? What's the reception been like from the players and from the folks who are getting to know you in your new role?
Well, it's been great, and I'm just trying to slowly go through the room and say hi to guys a little bit, and I wouldn't expect them to care or remember my name, at least not in the early going. But I'll tell you one thing that happened. The first exhibition game, and I can't remember the date. The first one at Canada Life Center, so it would have been the second game. Everyone that I walked past or spoke to, they kind of seemed to know, hey, you're the new guy. And they were so friendly. And I was kind of, you know, taken aback a little bit in a good way. And you know, I mean, I'm 52. it's not like I'm crying myself to sleep every night out here because I'm lonely, but we all want to feel like we fit in. And that stuff meant a lot to me. And the TSN crew has really been good. I mean, Kevin Sawyer picked me up at the airport when I landed to come here. It was a Saturday. We were going to it was a Sunday game at Edmonton, so we flew in that day. But he picked me up, took me right to practice, and I met a lot of staff members. And I don't know why it's so hard for us as humans to remember people's names. I did the best I could. But, yeah, just that's my long-winded way of saying everybody's been kind so far, and I really appreciate it.
Well, that's why we have our names at the bottom of the screen, because otherwise I'd never remember what Dave and Ezzy's names are. And I've known them for 15 years, more closer like 30 years. But, you know, that's neither here nor there.
Hold on, Dan, the key for TSN is just keeping Freddie happy. If you make Freddie happy, then you've got no problems at all.
Freddie was one of the first people I met. So, it's good. I like talking to those veteran cameramen. They know a lot of stuff, right? They keep some secrets, but they're pretty sharp. Nothing gets by those guys.
I learned my lesson early on, Dan. I think it was the first year or the second year of the Jets, and I kind of got into the shot with Sarah. You know, Sarah had to kind of push me away a little bit. I was still you know, a little bit of a newbie back then, and me and Freddie had a little bit of a beef, but, you know, we made amends, and we're all good now. But I learned very early on with this Jets 2.0 that you don't mess with Freddie.
No, that guy deserves some. Actually, last night they were telling a story after the game that he had worked going back to 1999. Freddie's a cameraman for people who don't know. He had worked right at the net. It was like 3 12-hour days of beach volleyball in 32 degree heat. So I think he earned his stripes. Well, I'm sure before that, but I know he's a bit of a legend, and I just met the guy, so it's pretty cool.
Dan, you talk about that Kevin picked you up at the airport. There's nothing that can be replicated with experience and with time and being sort of attached at the hip with somebody. And that's, you learn their verbal cues and their verbal tics and how they sort of operate, from a broadcasting perspective. How long does that take until you're really sort of comfortable with a play-by-play guy and how different, pardon me, with a color guy, and how different is that when you're not next to them in the booth, when one's up and one's down?
Well, this is the first time I've ever done that, one up and one down. So it's a little more difficult to get that when you're not beside each other, because, like what I'm doing right now is when the play stops, basically I'm not talking anymore. And because I know Kevin has something he wants to say, most likely. But you can't give a guy when he's down at ice level and I'm up top, you can't give him like a hand signal or put your hand on his arm to say, I want to say something. So that'll take a while. But I think it's been okay so far. I know in the different rinks, he obviously can't be down below at ice level everywhere. So I'm not sure in Dallas, our next game, if he's going to be beside me or not. But, I've always felt I like to defer to the color commentator, right? I mean, I'm not the analyst. So when the play stops, for the most part, I'm not going to say anything. Although, like last night, for example, there were times you get a sense in the second period when there wasn't a lot going on, especially for the Jets. There was a lot of whistles in quick succession. So I knew he wouldn't necessarily have something to say every time. So there's a couple of times where there was a few seconds of a gap and I would kind of chip in and say something to help keep things moving along. But right away, we got along really well. And I know it's going to work. And I really like his work. So, but it takes time. I don't know if it takes a couple of years until you really got it where you can not read each other's minds, but I worked with Sergio Momesso in Montreal for 8 years. And at one point we were, half of that time in, 4 years in, maybe we would finish each other's thoughts almost. So it's kind of a neat thing when it builds over time.
Dan, just switching back to last night's game, before you came on, we were talking about, all the forward lines, the defense, and specifically, we kind of focus more on the fourth line and the second line. And, what Drew said was that the second line definitely had more question marks than the top line. Scheifele, Connor, Ehlers. I mean, those are your three most talented players. Everybody kind of knows what to expect from them. What stood out to you about Pierre-Luc Dubois, Cole Perfetti, and Blake Wheeler? What I said was they played well, and it's only one game, so you always want to take it with a grain of salt. But was that a line that you can see is really only scratching the surface, and we're going to see as the games go on and on really what this line has to offer?
I think it's a pivotal line. I think we know what we'll get at least offensively from the first line. But if that second line can come together, obviously it makes it that much more difficult to check the Jets, right? And it's like anything else, it's about depth. So I'm really, really intrigued by Perfetti. I mean, here's a guy who's given a chance at a young age to play with two really good players. And I like that. I mean, he's a smaller guy and obviously creative, and he's got a couple of bigger guys with him. Not that that always works out the way that you want it to, but it is intriguing. And there was some good puck movement along that line. And how about that? I know it was a power play goal, but Dubois' pass to Scheifele was pretty special. So, yeah, I do think it's an important line that if they can find chemistry and kind of hold it together, then the Jets will be difficult to handle. Now, how long will they sort of leave that line together if they struggle? I mean, maybe that's a question for another day, but I was impressed. I mean, I liked the third line last night too, and it's easy to say when they win, you can pick some good spots. One thing that I thought was pretty telling or interesting to me, actually Rick Bowness was made available to the media before we found out he had COVID, and I asked him if he expected his team to be sloppy to start, because we see that at the start of every year, right? It doesn't matter how many practices you have or preseason games. When you play for real, it can be, you know, pretty choppy and the execution isn't that great. But I thought overall, you know, for that second line and really for everybody, I thought it was pretty good for the first game. So far, so good, I believe.
Dan Robertson, our guest, Winnipeg Jets broadcaster, the Jets next in action Monday night in Dallas, the first Central Division matchup of the game. Of course, the Illegal Curve post-game show after the game back here on our YouTube channel right around 10:15 p.m. Central Time on Monday.
Now, Dan, were you starting to question your decision-making when you came here and you saw a little bit of snow on the ground already in Winnipeg and you're thinking to yourself, what exactly did I get myself into? And the second part, the addendum, I think, is, did you convince John Liu to come? I mean, I know he's a Winnipegger, but was it like a package deal in order to bring in all of the Montreal guys to Winnipeg?
Yeah, it's funny. I get up, I'm staying at the Delta, and I looked out the window and I thought, is that what I think it is? You know? But no, that's more than fine with me. It's funny how it worked with John and I. I don't even know if John knows this, but we were at practice in Montreal, and I had already sort of gotten the job here in Winnipeg, but I told my old boss I'd put in one more shift. I think it was like the first day of training camp for the Canadians. And John's sitting beside me, and I said, how are you, John? And what's going on? He said, well, I think I've got a job in Winnipeg, but I'm not sure. It's down to me and someone else. And I knew that he had the job at the time. So it's just, I know people have been having some fun with it on Twitter, some of the, you know, the Canadians fans, I guess, about the whole package deal and that sort of thing. But, you know, it is neat. And I get it too. Like, I hope the viewers come to accept us, because I know Sarah did a great job for a long time and Dennis as well. So one thing I know about John, he works extremely hard and he's very good at what he does. So he's got that part covered, and yeah, it's kind of new. And like, even looking at the script last night, I hadn't done in a half hour pregame before. We did it once in exhibition season. Now it's a different format. Sunday or Monday in Dallas, John doesn't travel, so I'll be kind of hosting and doing the intermissions and that sort of thing. So it's a good challenge for me.
After you took the job, did you get in touch at all with Dennis Bayak to pick his brain about his experience here in Winnipeg?
And I did.
Go ahead.
Yeah. Sorry. Yeah. Even, I guess, when I thought I might have a crack at it, I got in touch with Dennis. And I'm sure everybody who thought they had a crack at it got in touch with Dennis. But he was really good to me. And I, one of the first times I was here in Winnipeg, I can remember just how nice he was. I just introduced myself and we had a good chat, and I had a good feeling about him, and I was right. So, you know, he was telling me some of the ins and outs of the market, and you know, he said it's the staff. Honestly, he said the staff is really good around the Jets. The TSN crew is good. So, you know, it's one of those things where I applied for the job and I wanted it, but you know, you want to make sure that everything is good. You're not going to just take a job just because it's there. And I enjoyed my old job. So, but what he had to tell me really went a long way in making me realize that if they did make the offer and if it was a good one, that I would take it. So I, you know what, even before the game last night, Dennis texted us all and said, best of luck, guys. So I knew he was watching and tried not to think about that as I was calling the game. I didn't need the extra pressure, but no, he's been great.
Now, Dennis is an absolute beauty, an absolute legend. I think we would all agree with that. And I wanted to ask you, Dan, you mentioned earlier that, you know, over the last couple of weeks, you've been getting to know Jets players, you know, Jets staff, everything like that. Like, how nice is it for you, someone who's been in broadcasting for so long, that we're back to, you know, what is what we used to call normal, I guess. I don't know. I don't think anybody likes the term new normal, but just how nice is it to be able to, you know, talk with players and not be wearing masks and everything like that. Obviously, COVID is, you know, hasn't gone anywhere. Drew just had COVID, a week ago, Drew, 2 weeks ago. I mean, I think, you know, everybody knows that there's a good chance that you're going to get it again. And, you know, hopefully the vaccine does its job. But just how nice is it for you and Kevin and broadcasters in general, just to, you know, be able to go up and have a casual conversation with a player and not have, you know, masks and all of these other concerns surrounding the pandemic.
Well, it's great. You know, there's guys who joined the Canadians during COVID that I never got to meet. I never got to know them. I mean, we ended up getting back to normal, I guess, last year. So we were back on the charter again, but still it's the value of kind of lingering in the room a little bit is enormous, especially for an analyst like Kevin. I mean, he'll go in and maybe sit with an H. Schmidt or whoever and have a chat with him. And that's, as you guys know, and as people should know, that's where you get stuff that you can, that really adds value to the broadcast. I mean, we can all go online and find out that, you know, this player had 47 goals last year, but you can't sit with, only a couple of us can sit there and, you know, get to know him and get some, you're not looking for dirt or anything like that, but just value added things. And it was, you know, just even yesterday, to give you an example. So Morgan Barron is from Halifax and I'm from Nova Scotia. And I just kind of wanted to make that connection. And I called his brother's first NHL goal as a Canadian. So we went up and chatted and he said, yeah, he said, when you got the job, my mother sent me the clip of you calling Justin's goal. I thought, oh, wow, that's really cool. So you're trying to, you know, foster those relationships, I guess, and not even to get stuff for the broadcast so much. It's just nice to get to know interesting people like that for me. So it was, I mean, obviously to say it was a strange time is an understatement, but yeah, I'm so glad that it's back and we can just get to know people again. And even, you know, I'm getting to know reporters and camera people like that too, in that kind of a setting. So it's nice.
Well, you know, Dan, one of the things we've noticed is just the return of the fan connection to the teams. And I think that's one thing that has really been disconnected, especially here in Canada, was that the fans didn't have that level of connectivity. And so, you know, the Jets held their fan fest at the Iceplex and the fans were right up close watching the players walk by, bumping, little kids bumping their fists against the players. Like, that's something that they haven't had for 2 years. And I think it removes the market from the importance of the team from the market. And a place like Winnipeg, where it's so integral to not have that for a couple of years, that's significant. And now you see it. And I said to the guys on the show, you just have a different feeling right now here in Winnipeg. I mean, I can't speak to other markets, but here in Winnipeg, you just see that connectivity. Now the fans are slowly gaining it back with the players that they haven't had for years.
And I hadn't thought of that connection at all. Right. But it makes sense. That was the day that I flew into town and we went right to practice and I was, you know, kind of staggered by how many people were there, right? It was awesome. And I, this is what I'm saying is legitimate here. I'm not just saying it because I'm in Winnipeg, but anytime I would come here before calling Canadians games, I just got that sort of sensation that how important the Jets are to the community and that ability to kind of get up close to the players, you can't replicate that, right? So hopefully that goes a long way to getting, you know, even more excitement around the team, but you're right. And it was cool to see that day at Fan Fest, I guess it was called, or whatever it was. There were so many, you know, people of all different ages and it was just really nice to see again. And it reminded me a little bit of what we lost for a while.
We'll let you go on this last question, Dan. I mean, you've called hockey and broadcast in passionate hockey markets, obviously here in Winnipeg. Montreal is, I mean, almost on another world altogether. Halifax, from the, you know their history of great junior hockey teams, and of course their successful stints as a host of the of world junior tournaments. Some of the best tournaments that we can remember have been held in the Atlantic provinces and in Halifax. How does it change your, how does your approach change from market to market? Now, each market is obviously unique. They're all passionate, but I think the passion in Montreal is different than the passion in Winnipeg. You know, I think it's way more political, let's say, in Montreal and in Quebec than it is here in Manitoba. But how does your approach change depending on the market that you're in?
Well, hopefully not too much. And that's one thing I'm going to enjoy over the next, you know, certainly this first year that I'll be doing these games, is to really get a feel for just how much, and I touched on it earlier, how much the Jets mean to the fans. You know, I guess along those lines a little bit, hopefully to answer your question, you know, when I call games, I'm not an out and out homer, right? I just can't do it. And I've been told before, like my last job when I started, I got, hey, you could be a little more of a homer. And I said, no, I can't. That's not in me. So, you know, I want the Jets obviously to do really well, and it's better for everybody when they do. I mean, last night is a case in point. But I think the thing about broadcasting in a knowledgeable market, you can't fool anybody. Like I can't, if the Jets play a clunker, I can't say, well, you know, they're playing a great game here. Like, you know, people are just going to say this guy's a clown. So I think you have to respect the knowledge of the hockey fans in whatever market you're in. And obviously, you know, people here know their hockey. So that's all you can do, I think, is kind of approach it that way. Be honest. Don't be too critical. And hopefully people will respect that. And I think that's what's going to happen here.
Dan Robertson, Winnipeg Jets broadcaster, thanks for joining us this morning. Now that you've joined us once, if you ask Paul or Jamie or you get in touch with Dennis, they have a restraining order against us that they can just hand over to you. It's on file. So yeah, that way okay. You can avoid us.
Easily transferable.
Forward. Yeah. It's, well, you know, we've really made it easy. We've made it seamless for all the broadcasters to now to get to avoid us moving forward. You have to get through the initiation once. And then after that, you can just file that and it's on record.
Well, that's one thing Dennis did not mention, but I'll call him on that one.
Yeah, and I know that Drew said that was the last question, but I do have one question for you that I've been, you know, dying to ask you.
This is also what Ginsburg does all the time. This is a Ginsburg tradition right here. Late
question. You got to get my late question in here, but, you know, Halifax, Nova Scotia, obviously known for a lot of things, lobster, seafood, everything like that. I'm sure you've heard about what Winnipeg is known for, mainly, we're always talking about food here. I mean, there's a reason why I'm 245 pounds, right? So have you tried honey dill sauce, and have you tried some pierogies?
I've never heard of honey dill sauce. Listen, I hope that your viewers don't start, you know, throwing things at the screen.
Okay, so I guess I'm going to have some honey dill sauce for you, waiting for you at the game Saturday. If I'm there, I'll give it to Dave. Honey dill sauce is, I mean, it's pretty self-explanatory, but you can dip mainly fries and other things like that, but... That's a little local Winnipeg delicacy, along with, you know, good pierogies from the North End.
Pierogies, yes. I spent some time in Saskatchewan years and years ago. Spent a Christmas there with a cousin, and I overloaded on them one Christmas Eve. So I'm always up for getting suggestions where the best ones to try are. I don't think you can go wrong with pierogies, but the honey dill sauce I'm looking forward to.
That is something we will definitely hook you up with, Dan. Dan Robertson, Winnipeg Jets broadcaster. Dan, appreciate your time this morning. Thanks so much for joining us. We look forward to getting to know you more over the coming weeks, months, and years. Welcome to Winnipeg, and we look forward to, of course, your next broadcast on Monday as the Jets do battle in Dallas against the Stars.
Anytime. Thanks, guys.
Take care, Dan. Thanks very much. Let's head to break. When we come back, over-unders for the upcoming Winnipeg Jets season. Drew Mandel, Dave Minuk, Ezra Ginsburg, and Dan Robertson. You're watching the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on YouTube and all of our social media platforms.
Keeping Winnipeg laughing for over 30 years. Rumors, Canada's longest-running comedy club, bringing you the biggest laughs from the best comedians on the planet. Jerry Seinfeld, Chris Rock, Jon Stewart, Dennis Miller, Brad Garrett, the greats, and all the up-and-comers, too. When was the last time you laughed out loud? Make it a great night out with friends, or book your office or birthday party. Even a fundraising event at Rumors. Get all the details and dates on upcoming shows at rumorscomedyclub.com.
Hi, Ez. A strange question for you. But why are you lying on the ground being crushed by a piano?
Well, Drew, I definitely tried to carry this baby grand piano down the stairs by myself, and somehow I failed miserably.
Right. Yeah. Sorry, that was a silly question on my part. My apologies. Would you like me to call Rolly's Transfer Moving and Storage to help you move the piano? They are the most experienced piano moving company in Winnipeg, after all.
Yes, please call Rolies and hurry. This piano is very, very heavy.
Rolies Transfer Moving and Storage offers stress-free residential moving services while taking great care of your personal belongings, including your piano. At Rolies, no job is too big or too small. For more information, visit Rolies.com.
Hi, it's Drew from Illegal Curve here. Selling your home can be stressful, but it wasn't for me. Thanks to my friends at Zappia Group Realty, they made the process so easy. My home sold within 48 hours and with multiple offers. Zappia Group Realty took care of everything with their exquisite customer service and attention to detail. If you want to sell your home for more in less time, get started by talking to Frank and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty. Online at zappiagroup.com.
Hey, Drew.
Ezzy, whoa, what a smile.
Yeah, I got my crowns done at Linden Market Dental Center, and they whiten my teeth.
I see.
They're so bright that every time I smile, they go...
We have hockey tonight. Do you have a mouth guard to protect those pearly whites?
I sure do.
Whoa, they even ting through the mouth guard.
Linden Market Dental Center covers all your dental needs, from restorative to cosmetic dentistry, and will fit you with a sports guard for that active lifestyle. 877 Waverly, see lindenmarketdental.com.
So you're a pizza person, you married a wing person, but somehow your kids are salad people. You can't pick your fam, but you can pick your BP meal deal. Starting from $18.99 for takeout or delivery at bostonpizza.com.
Hour number two of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show starts now. Dave Minuk's in the top right, Ezra Ginsberg's in the bottom middle. I'm your host, Drew Mandel. Still to join us, Mike Heike, Dallas Stars, covers the Stars for the team website. He's been plugged into the organization there for many, many years. He joins us at the bottom of the hour to preview Monday's game in the Lone Star State. Great interview with Dan Robertson, as I was just texting.
I was serious about that honey dill sauce. I'm going to bring Dan some honey dill sauce.
Oh, absolutely. You have to bring him some honey dill sauce. Yeah. No question about it. But it's just great to
Can we all agree, by the way? Sorry, I'm fixated on the honey dill sauce. I'm a little bit hungry here. Yeah. But can we all agree, though, that like that's like the best thing ever for dipping fries into?
I don't dip
like, my I don't fries even do ketchup anymore.
I don't dip my fries into honey dill. I find that to be a little sweet. My chicken fingers or my chicken nuggets, chicken
strips. And you also just put your thumb in there. And
that's
just,
right. And I just scoop with my hand thumb. Is what I do. Yeah, just do it just straight that way. Dave, you're on mute. We can't hear what you're saying. Whatever insight you are adding to this hell of a conversation.
Well, it's not much, but I'm going to have a little bit of honesty right now.
You're not a honey dill guy.
I've never had honey dill.
You've never had honey dill. Like that's
surprising. I'm not a sauce guy though. I don't really like
like your condiments.
No, I literally just need barbecue sauce. That's it. I've never liked you know what the problem is? I'm also a man child, so I don't eat foods if I don't think
what about that tartar sauce, Dave.
Nope. Hate it. I won't eat it. But a lot of times I won't even try something. It's not that I dislike it. I just dislike the name, so I won't eat it. Cottage cheese, disgusting. Yogurt, disgusting.
No, I disagree with that one. Cottage cheese is great. Put a little pepper on there, you make a little sandwich with toast, and you put some cucumbers and some tomatoes and some cottage cheese. Oh, that's nice.
That sounds way too healthy for something you've been eating, Ginsberg. I don't know who you are or what you've done with Ezra, but you better be slathering some lard onto that cottage.
I tried something called lettuce the other day, Drew. It's actually not that bad.
I'm losing a lot of respect in the chat. A lot of people are upset with me, but them's the breaks.
How about some freshwater fishing, Dave? Do you like some freshwater fishing? Is that something
you get fishing. Into? I do love fishing. That's true. And on November 5th and November 6th, you know where you're going to be? The Winnipeg Ice Fishing Show. Because it's time to gear up for hard water season at the Winnipeg Ice Fishing Show on November 5th and 6th at Red River X Place. Dozens of retailers are going to be on site with all your favorite fishing lures, electronics, ice shelters, augers, winter apparel, and more. Expert speakers, kids scavenger hunt, and prize draws. Just $10 admission at the door, and kids are and 12 and under kids are free. And let me tell you something. I watch a lot of YouTube. I watch a lot of fishing on YouTube, and there's some really good guys in Manitoba who do fishing, who have great fishing channels. Aaron Weeb, Uncut Angling, and then you got Clayton Schick Outdoors. Got some guys who do some really good YouTube, who have really good YouTube channels, do some great fishing here in Manitoba. So if you're into fishing, you're into ice fishing, come down to the Red River X Place on November 5th and 6th. Check that out. I see could be broadcasting on the Saturday from that location. So we can talk about fishing. We can talk about hockey. It'll be good times.
And if we're talking about fishing shows on TV, we got to give a shout out to Bob Izumi.
And Wayne. Don't forget about Wayne. Bob and Wayne Izumi. Yeah. There you go.
I'm out of my element, so I'll let you guys carry on with the fishing
talk. Reel it in here, Drew. Chat.
Very good, Ezzy. Very punny. Alrighty, over-unders for this upcoming Winnipeg Jets season. We do this at the beginning of each year. This year, no different. Nikolaj Ehlers has averaged 23.4 goals per season since entering the NHL. This year, accounting for his expected to be increased role with the Jets, Ehlers will have over or under 37.5 goals.
So you always make it hard, don't you, Drew?
That's the point of the segment. If it was an easy segment, it'd be really boring.
Yeah, I guess so. But I love how you started off with Nikki Ehlers. I am going to say over, maybe because I'm a huge Ehlers guy. But if he stays healthy, which applies to anybody, same thing goes for Austin Matthews. If he's going to score 60 goals again, most likely he's going to have to play close to 82 games. So I am going to say he's going to go over. I think he's going to score 40 for the first time ever.
So if he gets 20th
in the
place,
NHL, obviously.
20th place last year in the NHL, had 37 goals, over or under 37.5 for Ehlers, Mr. Dave.
I think he's going to go over. I mean, obviously this is all prefaced on whether he stays healthy, but I mean, on that line, it's hard to see how he's not going to. I mean, he's a great passer, and we saw that. You know, he had picked up a couple of assists last night in the game, but we also know what an effective goal scorer he is. So especially as he said, when they were coming down on that 4-on-1, as he yelled, "Is that the flying V?" But
then he shot. I mean, it wasn't the best shot, and he had options, right, Dave? But I like to see that out of Ehlers, because Ehlers is a guy that is a fantastic playmaker. So you want him to be greedy, right? Like he's got a fantastic wrist shot and slapper. Obviously, you don't see the slapper as much as you used to, right? But I mean, again, if he's healthy, why can't he score 40?
Well, I don't know. Rob Mahoney makes a good point. He's Ehlers is on point, pace for 0 goals, but he's about 164 assists, so it's not looking good for 40. Yeah. I agree with
Rob. Those are Gretzky type of numbers.
Yeah, but I mean, I think I definitely think he could hit like that 41, 42 mark for sure.
Mark Scheifele has averaged at least 1 point per game every season, starting with the 2016-17 season. This year, Mark Scheifele will be over or under 1.07 points per game, which equates to 88 points in 82 games played.
I'll go first. I think he's going to be a little bit under there. I mean, you mentioned it, Drew. Like, you might as well just pencil Scheifele in for a minimum of, you know, 75 to 80 points. But I think 87 might be a little bit high for him. So I'm going to say under, but I don't think it's going to be much under. It'll be right around a point per game.
Dave, you're on mute.
Dave agrees with me.
Yeah.
No, I know. The thing was frozen. I didn't know what was going on. I actually think he's going to go over. I think he's going to have a career year this year. So I think, I don't know. I just think that.
I feel like Manuk's going to be going just over for every single question.
Over, over, over. I mean, we never listen to stuff anyway. So, I mean, it's not like every once in a while.
Who actually cares about these predictions?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Is that the only
time I worked hard on these.
Ezzy and I talked about it. It's like the only time people ever bring up predictions is like, it's like that time I made the Dallas Stars making the Stanley Cup out of nowhere prediction. And I, of course, mentioned it throughout the course of the end of that year. And then
didn't you pick Montreal as well, though? Like at the beginning of the playoffs?
Yeah, I don't remember.
I'm pretty sure you picked Montreal to go to the final, which was also a bold prediction.
I don't remember doing that, but you know what, Ezzy, if you're going to give me credit for it, I'll take it. So anyways, I know I do think Scheifele's going to have a career year. I actually think he can be close to 100 this year.
Last season, Kyle Connor shattered his previous high in points with 93 in 79 games played, good for 13th overall in the NHL. At the end of this year, Kyle Connor will finish higher or lower than 15th place in total points in the NHL.
Well, I mean, so 15th place is going to be around 90 points, right? Something like that. If I mean, I could see, you know, point totals being a little bit lower. I mean, you had a lot of guys over 90 points last year. It's a tough one. Can I go even?
No.
You can't. It's literally called over under.
It's not called over under or even, Ginsburg. Okay, it's called over under.
Over. I think he is going to be in the top 15 in scoring.
Okay,
that would be over, right?
I'm going to take it one step further and go a little more bold. I think he's going to be in the top 10 of scoring.
Wow, Dave M is wearing the optimistic blinders.
I'm not. I just
so
think
so far
that,
on this Saturday.
Basically,
morning.
The top line is going to have 300 points this year. Is what you're saying?
That's
Dave.
What I'm saying.
Okay, last year, Cole Caulfield, namesake to Cole Perfetti.
Goal Caulfield.
finished with 43 points in 67 games played for Montreal. This year for the Jets, Cole Perfetti will finish with over or under 42.5 points.
It's a good one. I got to give you credit, Drew. This is a good one because you're comparing two smaller skilled players. Love Cole Caulfield. I'm going to go over. I have Cole Perfetti like in my mind, which is a scary place. I have Cole Perfetti somewhere around 50 points. I think, you know, it's I kind of see like, you know, 15 to 20 goals, you know, 20 to 25 assists. I feel like he's going to be around 45 to 50 points. So over.
Well, I'm going to, I don't wear glasses, but my rose colored glasses are going to stay on because I'm also, but I mean, I'm going over for a reason because I said that the Jets would be able to use Cole Perfetti's production in order to kind of offset the loss of Andrew Kopp. So it would look a little hypocritical if he's not producing enough points to do that. So I'm definitely taking the over on Cole Perfetti.
This one's a little interesting. So bear with me on this one. Last year, Pierre-Luc Dubois drew the most penalties on the Jets with 51, while at the same time taking the most penalties with 45 for a net positive of 6 penalties. This year, Pierre-Luc Dubois will have a net penalty number of over or under 3.5 penalties.
And then last night he had a penalty, right? So, I mean, it's appropriate that that question was you came up with that question. I'm going to say his penalty differential is higher than it was last year.
So you think he's going to draw more penalties than
yeah, and take less penalties, yeah.
Okay, so as he's going over the 3.5 there, Mr. Manuk?
I like that one, Drew. It's a little bit more obscure, but I do enjoy that.
Esoteric.
Yeah, definitely. But I will, well, I'm really boring today. I'm just going over. But I think as he's right, I think there's going to be an effectiveness to his game. You know, he knows how important this year is, probably for him more than any other player on this team, with the exception of Mark Scheifele, Connor Hellebuyck, Blake Wheeler, and a couple others. But I think that, no, I think Pierre-Luc Dubois knows how important this year is, and I think he's going to be dialed in. So I'm going to take the over on that one.
Okay. Blake Wheeler, over the last three seasons, Blake Wheeler has averaged 0.92 points per game played this year. Given that he is expected to have a reduced role, Blake Wheeler will average over or under 0.65 points per game played, which would equal out to 53 points.
Oh, I think that's a little low, Drew. I think he's going to be above that. I think he's going to be below 0.9 for sure. But 0.53 seems a little bit low. But no, I mean,
0.65 is the number. 0.65, which would equal 53 points.
Sorry, yeah, 0.65. I don't know what I said, but I think it's going to be higher than 0.65. So I could see him around 60 points, something like that.
Okay.
You set the bar low.
Maybe 65.
Yeah, you set the bar low there, Drew. I mean, I was thinking if you would have gone a little higher, I would have been more inclined to go under. But I think because of where you set that, if I'm the Betway guy right now, I'm taking those odds. I'm going over.
Okay, overs for Wheeler. This is a 3 for the price of 1. Morgan Barron, Adam Lowry, Mason Appleton. Last year, Barron, Lowry, and Appleton combined for 17 goals for their respective teams. This year, those three players will, combined, score over or under 29.5 goals.
Well, we should mention Morgan Barron didn't spend the whole year in the NHL, right?
Like of course. I'm just talking NHL numbers, you know, yes.
Sure. But those, yeah, I'm just saying those would have been higher, right? Because he played for Hartford and then the Moose, yeah. Right? So, what was the over-under, Drew?
29.5 goals for the three players combined.
29.5 goals. Okay. Well, I'll go over because, you know, I could see, you know, I think each one of these guys is kind of in the 10 to 15 goal range, I would say. I think you guys would agree with that, but you've got a higher upside with Morgan Barron. Like, I don't know if Morgan Barron hits 20 goals, but I think he does have that potential to hit 20 goals in the NHL. So I could see this line being a 45 goal line.
Wow. That's optimistic. Dave, well, do you share that optimism?
I don't, I mean, I 40, 45 is a lot for that line, but yeah, I think
that's a number not rooted in reality.
That's also our ages.
29.5.
That's also our ages. I thought I'd throw it out there. Well, sure, Drew's in his 80s.
Yeah. But I think that I've said this a long time. You can't have an ineffective third line. You need one. They can't just be a checking line. They have to be able to produce. And Adam Lowry has to get into that 15 goal area. So if he's attributing at least half of those goals in there, you know, and you got Mason Appleton maybe coming with the, you know, in the 10 to 13 range, I think Morgan Barron's could be that 8 to 10 range. So I'm going to go over on that one.
Over. Both.
And I'm going to come back and check the receipts on this one. If those guys finished after 82 games with that, I'm going to remember this.
Look, I hope everybody checks the receipts and throws it back in our face at the end of the year. That's all we ask of you in the audience, is hold us to account for some of our nonsense predictions. Together, Saku Manalainen and David Gustafsson have 20 letters in their last name. Combined, they will have over or under 40.5 points for the Jets this season.
What about Axel Janssen Fjällby? That's a lot of letters too.
If you weren't in the lineup in last night's game, I did omit you from over under.
I feel like I could do an entire segment on Axel Janssen Fjällby's hair. Like that guy's flow it's like Daniel Alfredson-esque, just beautiful Swedish locks. What was it, Drew? Over 20 points?
No, together 40. Combined over 40.5 points.
Those two or Gagne thrown in there?
No, just the two. Just the two guys with the big long last names that equal 20 letters.
No, they're not gonna get up to 40 combined points.
Yeah, I'm going under on that one. I'm going under. That's my first under. I'm going under on that one.
I mean, David Gustafsson's. I mean, I it's hard to put for me. It's hard because he's never played a full NHL season, right? So it's really hard to predict his points, and he's on the fourth line, obviously. So his minutes. Or decrease. Like I could see him easily getting around 30 to 35 points, but it's just really hard for me to project him. But yeah, I'll go under. I mean, these guys are going to have more defensive responsibilities on the fourth line, obviously, right?
Yeah, no, that's fair. In 2017-18, playing a mostly full season for Vancouver, Sam Gagne scored 10 goals and had 31 points. Last year, playing 81 games for Detroit, Sam Gagne scored 13 goals and had 31 points. Sam Gagne will have over or under 11.5 goals and 29.5 points this season.
He's already got a goal, right? So I mean, he's
taking baby steps there.
Well, that's the thing I asked about Manalainen and Gustafsson, because Gagne is obviously the most offensively gifted player on that line, or at least the most established offensive player on that line. But I'm going to say under, but just by a little bit. Like I think Gagne will be around 25 to 30 points.
Look, he could be the beneficiary of injuries, right? I mean, if there are injuries, then he's going to get more power play time. So I could see him, you know, potentially finishing in the 30, similar to what he did in Detroit last year. So this is a harder one to go over, because it's probably easier to go under on this one. But I'm going to maintain my mostly over prediction. So I'm going over.
And Dave, I'll say this much. If he gets 8 points in a game like he did with Edmonton, I mean, that's obviously going to seal the deal. He'll probably crack 30.
Spencer exactly Sutton just said the exact same thing.
Yeah, exactly.
It. 8 points in a single game. The man can do it.
Well, that's because Spencer Sutton is an intelligent man.
Last year, Josh Morrissey set a career high in six categories: goals, points, penalty minutes, power play goals, power play points, and shots on goal. This year, Josh Morrissey will set career highs in over or under 4.5 categories.
Whoa, that's a pretty intense question, Drew. This is a multi-category question.
I want to start writing this down. Yeah, okay.
Hold on, let me pull out my spreadsheets and my abacus here.
Yeah, seriously.
I mean, it's going to be tough to set that many career highs, so I'm going to say under. I mean, Josh Morrissey is, you know, the quarterback of this decor. He's the Jets' top defenseman, in my opinion. Obviously, you know, Neil Pionk and others are really good on the back end. Nate Schmidt, others, but. I just don't think he's going to break as many career highs as last year.
I'm going for my second under prediction on this one. I don't think, I'm with Ezzy. I think Josh Morrissey reestablished his game last year, and everybody saw what he was, which we knew what he was, but you know, there was question marks. And so I think with his return, I don't think he's going to be able to hit all those career highs again, but what did you say? 4.5, Drew?
4.5.
Yeah. I'm going to go under on that.
Last year, both Dylan DeMello and Logan Stanley had one goal, 12 assists for 13 total points, albeit in a different number of games played. This year, the difference in total points between Stanley and DeMello will be over or under 3.5 points.
I think it's going to be over, because I think Dylan Sandberg is going to be playing more games in the NHL this year, which means Logan Stanley is going to be playing less games. So I think Dylan DeMello will have, let's say, 5 to 10 more points.
Well, we saw Dylan DeMello was Mr. Activated yesterday. I mean, it was interesting watching him work the give and go. He seemed excited. And yeah, I mean, to be honest with you, I kind of lost track of that question a little bit, but I'm going to go over on that one as well.
Basically, do you think Dylan DeMello is going to have over or under 3.5?
Oh, okay. I'm just kidding. Yeah. But yeah, no.
I get confused sometimes too.
I'm going over on that one.
I try and keep the questions as simple as I can for you two dullards, and still I make them too complicated.
Exactly.
Brendan Dillon led all Jets defensemen last year, accumulating a career high 212 hits. The next closest Jets defenseman was Neil Pionk with 185 hits, a gap of 27. This year, Brendan Dillon will register over or under 195.5 hits.
Well, I think he had three. He was credited with three, if I'm not mistaken, yesterday. He's off to a good start here. I'm going to say over.
I'm inclined to go over as well. Speaking of Brendan Dillon, there was a really good interview with him that we have on illegalcurve.com. I posted it last week. He was with what's his name from? He usually covers the CFL, the BC Lions, Moj. And he did an interview with him that we have on illegalcurve.com. So if you want to check that out, kind of gives you good insight into a guy who was undrafted in the WHL, undrafted in the NHL, and how hard he's worked to get to where he is. So it was interesting to hear, and I think it ran about 40 minutes. So we've got it on illegalcurve.com if you want to check that out.
There you go. That's a good segue there. Neil Pionk. Many people are expecting a bounce back year for Neil Pionk after a bit of a disappointing 2021-22. His previous career high in points was 45. In 2019-20, Neil Pionk will score over or under 42.5 points this season.
I'm going to go over, and we should mention, I mean, we know he's struggling with injuries last year, so I think that just has to be mentioned about why his season was disappointing just overall and offensively. But yeah, I think he can easily, you know, get close to 50 points or maybe even more.
You know, this is a real interesting one because it depends on how much power play time he's going to be getting.
Right.
And so I'm inclined to go under, not by much. I think he'll probably finish in the 40 range, but I'm going to go under on this one. And again, I don't necessarily indicate that doesn't to me necessarily suggest that he's having a bad season. It's just, I think that he may points wise.
Very calculating on that one, Dave. Like you took that question more seriously than some of the other ones.
Yeah, that's actually the first time.
What I mean by that is you actually listened to the
question. The first time I was like, well, I got a 50-50 shot of making a statement that's going to sound right.
I think I kept the number of syllables below three on a per word basis there, so I helped Dave out there. Nate Schmidt played a career high in games last year with 77, but also had his fewest goals, 4, in the past five years. This season, Nate Schmidt will score over or under 5.5 goals
over
for the Jets.
I think he's going to score 10 to 12.
Wow, Ezzy. That's a big over. You're going more than double my number.
Big Nate Schmidt guy. It's really good when we had him on the show in June, by the way. It's awesome. I just love his personality. I love the way he plays hockey. Love everything about him.
Yeah, Nate, don't call me Bait Schmidt, as they wrote about him on the broadcast. I think that... when he's not dishing out nicknames like Big Bad Brad, I think he'll continue to produce for the Winnipeg Jets. And I could see him in the 7 to 8 range, so I'm definitely going to go over it on that one.
Got to get those numbers up, Dave.
Connor Hellebuck. In his Vezina winning season, Connor Hellebuck had a goal saved above average of 22.4. Last year, his goal save above average was 7.4. This year, Connor Hellebuck's goal saved above average will be over or under 17.5. Which would have placed him 8th in the NHL last year, just ahead of Andrei Vasilevsky.
Well, first off, that's hilarious, the comment that we have up there from Donnie Boy, or you just took it away, but what's the over-under on the over-under questions?
The number of over-under questions. Funny.
We got this one and then one more, so we're almost done, because Mike Hyka is joining us at the bottom of the hour.
I'm going to go over. I think Connor Hellebuck's going to be back in that kind of top three, top five goal save above expected. We know that, you know, Rick Bowness and his coaching staff has implemented a new system, which is going to, you know, reduce the amount of high danger shots and the number of shots overall, even though they peppered him with 41, the Rangers that is peppered him with 41 shots last night. But I do think that it is going to be over and he's going to be back in the top five of goal save above expected with, you know, the cream of the crop in the NHL, Igor Shesterkin, Andrei Vasilevsky, UC Saros. You guys know who the top goalies are.
I think the year prior he was closer to 30 in GSAA. So, I mean, I think that you're probably expecting him to, to bounce back. I am, at least. And we saw it, like, it was only one game. So we're going to, you know, not be so, so.
Hang on. It's only been one game. That was the fourth time we've.
Yeah, I think it was the fourth. I think it was the fourth. But I think that, no, I definitely expect Connor Hellebuyck to bounce back. So, I mean, that one, that's an easy over for me.
Okay, last one. David Rittich. Over the course of his NHL career, David Rittich has an average save percentage of 905. In his five seasons in Calgary, his save percentage ranged from 904 to 911. It has dropped steadily since then, hitting a low of 886 last season in Nashville. David Rittich's save percentage will be over or under 901 this season.
I'm going to say over. I think it's going to be 903.
Wow. No, over under with, I mean, like, with the target.
How the heck will we know what his save percentage is going to be? I mean, sure, over. Like you said 905. He'll probably be right around there.
I think you, if you tend to believe that the Jets are a playoff team and you're going to be getting, needing, you know, 10 to 15 wins from your backup goaltender, like they seemed like they had with Eric Comrie last year, you're going to have to hope that, you know, David Rittich is going to be over that percentage, Drew. So I'm going to think, especially, and we'll see if the Jets, as we've talked about, cut down the high danger chances against, even if they're allowing, you know, shots from, even if they're being outshot, if they're being outshot, but the shots aren't difficult, then I suspect that David Rittich's numbers will be up.
We shall see. That's
one quick thing though, Drew, I want to mention Eric Comrie, I believe, is getting the start tonight for Buffalo.
There you go. Speaking of goaltending issues or goaltenders, already goaltending issues in Toronto. It looks like Matt Murray left the Leafs' morning skate. He was all set to start against the Senators tonight. He left early with discomfort in his groin. So if he can't go, obviously that'll mean who's their other goalie? My brain's gone blank who their other goalie is.
Well, this is a Jets show, so we don't really pay attention.
Ilya Samsonov.
Right. Yeah. But he would get the start, but the Leafs don't actually have the third stringer. Erik Schallgren got hurt last night playing for the Marlies, apparently. So we might see an emergency backup goaltending situation already.
Well, who's the backup? But who would be the backup? The Marlies have two goaltenders.
Yes, but they apparently can't. They have 50 players under contract, the Leafs do. So they can't sign somebody because the Marlies are playing today as well.
Oh,
Eddie Belfour is going in net for the Leafs tonight.
So the backup goalie for the Marlies, who would naturally is going to be playing for the Marlies tonight, and then they're not able to sign another goaltender because they have 50 players under contract. So it looks like there might be an emergency an e-bug situation potentially brewing in Toronto on game three of the season already. So I'm sure that'll make some headlines in the newspapers over the next little while. Let's go to break. Mike Hajka of the Dallas Stars is going to join us. We're going to preview the upcoming Jets Stars. We'll talk to Mike about, of course, his experience and his time and his insight on Jets head coach Rick Bowness. Big Central Division matchup coming on Monday. We'll preview it next on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, live on YouTube and live on all of our social media platforms. Bottom of hour number two, Drew Mandel, Dave Manuk, Ezra Ginsberg with you. It's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Reminder, Monday night, the Illegal Curve post-game show after the Jets and the Stars, right around 10:15 or so p.m. Central Time. We'll be back here breaking down game number two of 82 this season, as we do after each and every game. Be sure to follow us here on YouTube, follow all of our social media platforms, download the podcast, subscribe to the podcast. That way you won't miss a minute of great Illegal Curve content. And of course, the opportunity to win that beautiful Jets Heritage Classic jersey right at the bottom there in the description. There's a nice link that says, you know, enter the contest or win here or something like that. Click on that link. You'll see a whole bunch of tasks that you need to do. You're already doing these tasks, so it's not really
asking much of you. We hope you're following Illegal Curve. We hope you're following IC Dave, IC Ezzy G, IC Drew.
Click on all those things, get extra entries into the contest. We're going to be giving away swag all season long, starting with that great, beautiful Jets Heritage Classic jersey. We got Tough Duck Tukes on the post-game show. We got Moose tickets to give away.
We still have Seagram swag that I've got to give away. Seagram's, I've got a huge box of that. So
nobody likes booze, so there's you don't have to worry about that. There certainly won't be any interest in getting any alcohol or anything. Nobody needs
quick
that.
Disclaimer, just Drew, because I don't want you to wet people's palates a little too quickly. We're not giving away booze here, Drew. We're giving away great Seagram's gear.
Ah, sorry, Mike. I got a little ahead of myself.
Including, I've got, I mean, we could give away, I've got the Fireball onesie, so I might have to fire that thing up for one of the post-game shows.
There you go. Who wants to see Dave wearing a onesie? I mean, I do. I think that would be, that's what, you know.
Well, you've seen it. I wore the Fireball onesie on the
I know,
the
it's time to
show.
Wear it again. You know what? Coming
my
up,
closet,
Dave,
my closet's right
end,
over there.
At the end of this month, we have those Thursday, Friday back-to-back games, where the or the Jets have the back-to-back games. We have the back-to-back post games, where the post game is actually going to start the next morning. Like post game is going to be at like 12:15 a.m. Central Time, back to back, and then the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on the Saturday. So, you know, I think that those seem like very onesie appropriate kind of games upcoming at the end of this month. You know, as you might want to take a couple naps now and try to prepare for those late nights.
I will.
Okay, Mike Hajka hopefully going to be joining us, but the Jets and the Stars, and we talked about this last week when we were previewing the season and everything else, is that, you know, these Central Division games against the Central Division opponents, these are the key games, because you look at that Central Division and obviously the goal is to finish top three, but it's a beast of a division. And the Colorado Avalanche, obviously defending Stanley Cup champions, we know how good they are. We know how good they're going to be. We almost can mark them in pen that they're going to finish top three in the Central. But it's a real dogfight afterwards, and that's why these games, these division games, pardon me, top three.
Number one.
Yeah, well, you know what I'm saying. But, you know, that's why I'm saying these division games where the Jets are going to be playing the Stars, and the Jets are going to be playing the Predators and the Blues and the Wild, these are the games that matter so much, because you need to take advantage of these games. And if you can have a good record against the Central Division, against your primary opponents, you should be in a decent spot as it pertains to the playoff chase, which is obviously too soon to look that far ahead at.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's early in the season. We've talked a lot about that. You don't want to get too excited about one win here, but I think, don't you want to have tough games to start the season off? Like I think you can get into a bit of a trap. We saw that a little bit last year, right? Like everybody was kind of losing their minds when the Jets lost that game to the Sharks. I forget if they lost to the Ducks as well, but I remember that Sharks loss, and you know, it turned out that the Jets, you know, didn't really recover. You know, they recovered from those first few losses, but they didn't recover after they struggled after that 9-3-3 start. So yeah, you're going to get some big tests coming up. Colorado is defending Stanley Cup champions. Love seeing Nazem Kadri getting his Stanley Cup ring, by the way, opening it up with his family. Not sure if you guys saw that, but that was awesome. So yeah, I mean, you love that. And I think these guys love that. Like they want to know how they stack up against some of the best teams, right? Like Dallas, not so much, but Dallas, they know. I mean, that's a team that finished 9 or 10 points ahead of you last year, right? And, you know, we're going to have Mike Hajka coming on, you know, pretty soon here. But they won their first game over the Nashville Predators 4-1. There's a rematch tonight between the Predators and the Stars. So these are the teams, right? You're talking about the Predators, the Stars, you know, the Blues. Like, I know some people are higher on the Blues than I am. I think, you know, that's one team. If there's one team that's going to take a step back, two teams, I should say, I think it will be the Blues and the Stars. Like, I just think Nashville is even better than they were last year by bringing in Ryan McDonough and Nito Niederreiter, and their defense and goaltending is, you know, top five, top 10 at the very least in the league. So Nashville to me is a lock to make the playoffs, but we'll see what happens. So yeah, I love to see, you know, some really, really good teams, the Jets facing really good teams early on, because you know that, you know, you're getting it done. And then you've got some easier teams coming up early November, Montreal, Chicago. And those are obviously teams that you just have to beat if you're going to be a playoff team.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. These are the games that matter the most. You look at that Dallas Stars lineup, Dave, and I mean, they obviously got that opening win in Nashville. I think it was 4-1, if I'm not mistaken, their first game of the year a couple nights ago.
I just said that.
I was going to say, as he literally just said that.
Oh, I don't listen to him. You guys know that.
Yeah, I was going to say. You clearly weren't listening.
The feeling is mutual, Mandel.
Yeah, no, I wouldn't expect anything different. It's not an insult. It's just the, you know, the reality of keeping my sanity for the last, you know, 25, 30 years is that, you know, when Ginsburg starts going, yep, I go, boop. Okay, the Mason Marchment signing. I mean, Mason Marchment is, I think, such an integral player for that Dallas Stars team. One of the best free agent signings, I think, this offseason in my books. I thought Mason Marchman would fit great with the Jets, obviously, that come to fruition. And never mind, you know, you know he doesn't get the headlines in terms of his talent. You sort of think of him as more of a, you know, maybe a grinder or a lower in the lineup kind of guy. He's not. I mean, you saw the skill that was on display in that goal he scored against Nashville earlier this week. He's playing on a second line role next to Tyler Seguin. I think Mason Marchman is really one of those linchpins for the Dallas Stars this year.
Well, he had 18 goals in 54 games last year for the Panthers, and we saw some of them against the Winnipeg Jets in that game here in Winnipeg. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, yeah, and he was a free agent that you know, some Jets fans were hoping the team was going to be able to snag. So, obviously, with his dad's connection to Winnipeg and that sort of thing. But no, I mean, I think those are the kind of players that you always like to see, those kind of breakout talents. I mean, he's undrafted and scored 18 goals in the NHL last year. I mean, those are my favorite kind of stories, because those are the ones of the perseverance. Those are the guys who, you know, who learn, you know, you don't take anything for granted. Just because you're a first round pick doesn't, you know, equate to the fact that you're automatically going to be a bona fide NHLer. So those are my favorite kind of stories, the favorite kind of players, the ones who work hard to get where they are. And he gets rewarded for that hard work with the 18 goals and then the deal in Dallas. So to me, that he's definitely, I think, a critical piece for them, right? Because one of the things we heard in Dallas with Rick Bowness from Stars fans, of course, was the fact that they went heavy on their top line. So we'll see. We'll bring in Mike Hajka. He knows more about the Dallas Stars than we'll ever know. So maybe he can give us insight into the Jets' Central Division rival.
We're pleased to welcome to the program there Mike Hajka from DallasStars.com. Good morning, Mike. How are you?
I'm good. Can you hear me?
We can hear you loud and clear. Loud and clear, Mike. I appreciate you joining us.
No problem. It's always fun.
It is always fun, Mike. Obviously brought you on to talk about the Stars ahead of the Jets and the Stars Monday night. You know, we were just talking about Mason Marchment because we were saying that, you know, a fantastic free agent signing. Obviously he got off to a great start in his first regular season game in a Stars uniform with that beautiful goal against Nashville. You know, from my perspective, he's a real sort of key to the star season, you know, knowing what you know of him now, having got to know him a bit, you know, what are your impressions of Mason Marchment and how important he's going to be to the Stars this year?
Well, it's interesting, just all the things they did in the summer had a certain amount of risk tied to them. And Marchment's 27, he's only played 91 NHL games and they gave him a 4-year contract at $4.5 million. You're like, I don't know if this is going to work out. But he has been their best player in preseason. He was dynamic in the season opener. Something has clicked in his head at 27 years of age, where he just has so much confidence right now. And he's a bull in the china shop. I thought it's funny because Pete DeBoer said this after the game. He goes, he was surprised by the amount of skill he had. And Pete has known Mason since he was young. And Steve Stopp has known him because they were good friends with his dad. So it's just... I don't know exactly how to explain it. I mean, obviously, he's a gifted athlete. He's a big kid. He's a fast skater. But something has just clicked where he now has confidence. And that play that he made around Yossi and then Rufin.
Did Mike freeze up on us? It looks like Mike may have frozen up on us. So we'll try and get the connectivity issues back and sorted out. You know, there you go, Mike, you're back. Sorry, you cut out on us for a second there.
I was just going to say, he's just very talented and I'm very excited about what he can do. I think he's going to be the real deal.
Yeah, and you mentioned his dad, which is obviously, you know, his passing was so tragic. He played for the Jets 1.0, as I think you know, Mike, and a lot of Jets fans were hoping the Jets could snag Mason Marchment. So that was a fantastic sign. And I think league-wide, people were kind of praising the Stars for bringing in Mason Marchment, and he obviously hasn't disappointed early on. I wanted to ask you about Tyler Seguin, because I feel like, and I might be wrong about this, I mean, I've always been a big fan of Tyler Seguin's game, but it's almost like, you know, he's a little bit forgotten about. You could say the same thing about Jamie Benn, and that's obviously with the emergence of Jason Robertson and Rupe Hintz, but, you know, registers 3 assists in that opening victory over the Nashville Predators. Like, do you feel like, and you're around the team a lot, like, is there a chip on Tyler Seguin's shoulder? Like, is there kind of a renewed optimism and kind of like, don't forget about me, I'm still a top offensive player in this league, even though he might not be that 75 to 80 point player that he once was? Like, what are your expectations for Tyler Seguin this year?
I talked to him yesterday about swagger. He loves to use the word swagger because he says that Wyatt Johnston has swagger. So I asked him if he'd lost any of his, you know, last year and the year before. And he goes, you had to kind of change the way you play the game. because he went to the net. He got 20 goals, but it was all around the net. It was rebounds. It was a different way than Tyler had played. And I think he's getting a little bit of the swagger back this year. And a lot of that is he just feels healthy. I mean, he's had, well, he had a sliced Achilles probably 5 or 6 years ago. And I think that took some of his speed away. Then he had the knee and then he had the hip. And so, I mean, you just got to fight through that stuff. And the hope is that, you know, he can do a little bit of both this year, that he's learned how to score the dirty, ugly goals, and he can still be the skilled guy, like the pass on to Wyatt Johnston. It would be really nice to see. It's an interesting balance because, you know, Tyler has been cocky. I mean, and you know, you can either like cocky kids or you can't. And I don't think he has that same cockiness now, but I think he has a drive, maybe a humble drive, to be as good as he used to be.
Mike Hyka is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're talking about the Dallas Stars, the Jets, and the Stars Monday night in the Lone Star State for the first meeting between these Central Division rivals.
You know, Mike, I can't believe we're already three questions in and nobody's asked you about Rick Bonus. I mean, yeah. You know, you spent a number of years covering him in Dallas. You know, he's a really well-respected, well-liked guy, but maybe give Jets fans some insight into Rick Bonus that you've accumulated over the years covering him.
Well, I love him. I think he's just an amazing human being. When you talk to players, they love playing for him. So that's a huge step forward. Now, he is a defensive-minded coach. He's coached defensemen for the majority of his career. So he's going to focus on that aspect of the game. I think his style, his system, whatever you want to say, is much more geared towards keeping the puck out of the net than putting it into the net. He wants to be balanced. He wants to do both. But I think when it comes down to it, he wants to be a defensive coach. The other interesting thing about him is because of he hasn't been a head coach for however long, I don't know that he really worries too much about matchups. I think in a perfect Rick Bonus world, all four lines roll. You get a 1-0 lead, and then you play simple, basic hockey. And I think that was frustrating for the fans down here at times. But it works. I mean, it can work really well. And he's just, like, I go back to the bubble, and Jamie Benn was a huge part of the Stars getting to the Stanley Cup final, but so was Rick Bonus. He calms people down. He keeps them focused. He just coaches a good team, so to speak. And so, you know, I think we've all talked before about that might be exactly what Winnipeg needs right now. So he could be just the right coach at the right time.
Conversely, Mike, Pete DeBoer obviously now behind the bench in Dallas. You know, what are you seeing from him and the sort of maybe the changes that he's implementing from the Bonus era?
Well, they're going to be a lot more aggressive. Daryl Ray and I were talking on the podcast the other day about how the Stars kind of waded into games. They tried not to make mistakes. They tried to be clean and not take too many risks. And I think Pete's team is going to just go. They're going to just hammer. I believe the last 2 or 3 years in Vegas, they led the league in shot differential at like +5. The Stars were like at, you know, even last year. So if they can become that team that sets the pace, gets more shots on goal, gets more shot attempts, it will be a better offensive team. And then the other thing is he's been given some good stuff to work with. Mason Marchment is, you know, I think he's going to be great. Sagan is much better than he was, you know, last year. This Nils Lundqvist that they got from the Rangers, a really skilled right-handed defenseman. Colin Miller from Buffalo looks like he wants a renaissance. So he's been given some good stuff to do what he wants to do. And, you know, on Thursday, it looked perfect. So if they can continue to do that, that's great. But we all know it's not going to be that way. And then facing Nashville tonight, they're going to get a real test on how Nashville feels about it.
So, Mike, we have to ask you about Jake Oettinger, right? Like he was, I don't know how you describe, you know, if there's a word that describes how good he was last year, especially in the playoffs. Like the word I would use is maybe he was a wizard for the Stars last year in that. But how do you, for you, what's the key? Because I mean, now the expectations have been, you know, increased. I mean, Jake Oettinger has always been a top prospect, but last year, I think you would agree, was really his, you know, coming out party. And when he really established himself as one of the top goalies. And we should mention he's still very young. So most likely we haven't seen the best of Jake Oettinger. But for you, what's the key? Because I would imagine, you know, he's going to play, you know, 55 to 60 games, maybe even more for the Dallas Stars. But, you know, how do you follow up what he did last year, especially in the playoffs, almost, you know, stealing a series?
Yeah, I think a lot of it's going to be how they manage him, because he hasn't done this before. And I do think 60 games is not out of the question, even though I think only four goalies played 60 last year. He's a little bit like too much of an overachiever, and that's how he's gotten where he is. And he can probably handle it at 23. But he, the first one on the ice, last one off the ice, he loves to practice. He loves to play. So then the question becomes, is he going to burn himself out this year? Because, like I said, it'll be his first season where he's really, you know, he doesn't get the AHL schedule. He doesn't get the college schedule. This is NHL with travel and four games in a week. And, you know, he might have to play them all. He might have to play back-to-backs. So we'll see on that regard. The other two aspects that I think make him who he is he's a fantastic athlete. You go watch him on the ice. He's 6'4", 220. He looks like a tight end. And then he's quick. He's nimble. He's mobile. And then at the other end of it all, he's also very basic. Like, he makes a lot of saves just sliding across the ice with his pads and the butterfly. You know, he moves very well on the ice and takes away the bottom part of the net. And then his big body takes up a lot of the top part of the net. So technically, he's a really good goalie as well. And then the other part of it is he doesn't seem to be fazed by all the success. You know, he just seems calm. The Calgary series, he loved it. I think he loved the tension. He loved the pressure of Canadian hockey. He just loved it. And so all of that combined, I think he can be really good. The one caveat is last year when they got Wedgwood, Wedgwood was a bit of a savior because Jake was hitting the wall because he had played, I don't know how many, 20 games straight maybe, and he was just starting to hit the wall. And they started to go to Wedgwood, you know, once every three games or so just to give Jake a break, and it made a huge difference for him. So that's the one concern is how does he manage all this? But I love him. I think he's a great athlete.
Well, speaking of great athletes, Mike, got to ask you about Jason Robertson. Has a fresh new deal in Dallas, you know, 23 years old, 41 goals last season. Maybe he waited a little bit because guys don't like training camp. They're like, you know what, I'll just sign my deal a week before training camp. I can get rid of most of that. He still managed to play a game. So how much excitement is there now that Jason Robertson's under contract for four more years and ready to go with Dallas and follow up what he did last year?
Well, it's a big deal, and I think they got him in at a number they could afford. Because I think he waited actually because, you know, he might be a $9 million player. He's, you know, pretty much a point of game player. If you look around the league, those guys are signing 8-year deals at $9 million. Mm-hmm. And I think his agent really wanted that. The Stars couldn't afford it. But I think he actually would have liked to have been in camp. He's looked rusty. He actually didn't get to play in the preseason. So his first game was in Nashville, and he looked a little bit rusty. So that'll be an interesting thing to watch just because he's so smart. He thinks the game so well, but he also has to keep up with, you know, Roope Hintz and that line. So it'll be interesting to see how long it takes him to, you know, just get things automatic, get things so they're, he doesn't have to think too much. I think he's in a really good place, and I think the Stars got him at a pretty good contract number.
Mike, last question for you. Miro Heiskanen, you know, should be a Norris Trophy winner one day, if not this coming season. I wanted to ask you about the impact of Ryan Suter and what impact Suter had on Heiskanen in maybe taking some of that veteran presence and sort of imparting some additional wisdom onto a younger defenseman who's obviously just dripping with talent.
I think it's helped. I like Ryan Suter. I think the fans down here, I think, get mad at him because they like younger players and they don't understand why a 36 or 37-year-old's playing 23, 24 minutes a game. But I do think it helped him last year. The interesting part about Miro is even when he was drafted, they said his defensive game was ahead of his offensive game, and that's kind of played out. I think as high as 38 points maybe. And, you know, they're playing Yossi tonight, and he had 96 or whatever last. he's got a ways to go before he's, in my opinion, a Norris Trophy candidate, because you have to have those numbers to be in that conversation. But he played 26 minutes the other night. I think that's pretty much going to be the target around there. Klingberg's gone, so he's running the top power play right now. I think he got 2 assists on the 2 power play goals. So the potential is there, obviously. But he has to become a little bit more selfish. And you know, maybe somebody like Suter can kind of tell him it's okay. It's okay because we need you. We need you to be selfish. So we'll see what happens with him.
Mike Heike covers the Dallas Stars for the team website, DallasStars.com. Been one of our favorite guests for, far too long for both of us Mike. But we appreciate your time. We appreciate your insight. Thanks so much for joining us, and we'll do it again real soon.
Thanks, and good luck up there. I hope Rick does well.
Thank you, Mike. Take care.
We'll
read your work tonight and again on Monday, of course.
Thanks.
There he goes, Mike Heike, joining us from the DallasStars.com. Gentlemen, we haven't actually formally given our predictions for this upcoming season as it pertains to our conference finalists and to our cup winners. So with mere minutes to go, I will ask you both for those. Ezra, we can start with you. Who's going to represent the West? Who's going to represent the East? Who's going to win the Stanley Cup at season's end?
So we're not going to do playoff teams. We're just doing top four, pretty much.
If you want to do playoff teams, you can. We have about
too much.
I'll tweet those out.
Just so you know, we got about 6 minutes. So you can.
Shocker! I think the New Jersey Devils are going to make the playoffs this year. I've thought about this a little bit. I have Colorado winning the cup. I'll start off with that again. I realize that they lost Nazem Kadri. They lost Andrei Burakovsky. The defense is just ridiculous. I'm sorry. There aren't that many teams, you know, that can trot out that defense. Kale McCarr has a real good shot again, you know, at winning the Norris Trophy, right? So, I mean, I'm picking Colorado to win the cup. My Stanley Cup finalist is going to be Carolina. I could also see Tampa Bay going far again as well. So I'll give you my conference finals, but my Stanley Cup final, I'm going all seas, baby, Colorado versus Carolina. I'm going to go Colorado Edmonton. I realize that, you know, the Oilers, there's still some question marks on the back end. I like Jack Campbell. I don't think anybody's going to mistake him for Igor Shesterkin, but I do think there's an upgrade there in net. So I'm going to go Colorado, Edmonton. I'm not going to take Tampa Bay in the conference finals. I'm going to do a little bit of a surprise here. I'm going to go with the Pittsburgh Penguins.
So you have the Penguins and the Hurricanes, and you have the Avalanche and you have the Oilers, and then it's Avalanche, Hurricanes, Avalanche winning the cup.
Right. So that prediction probably means that at least 2 of those teams are missing the playoffs.
Oh, there's no question about it. I mean, that goes without saying, but it's good to get it on the record. So when they, you know, suffer some sort of catastrophic hand, foot and mouth,
I've had that before.
Going through the entire dressing room, we'll know who we can blame for that. Dan, same question to you, my friend.
I think actually Calgary's coming out of the West is my prediction. I think that Markstrom's going to have it figured out unlike last playoffs. And I think if he's the difference maker, I think if you have a good goaltender, I think that would be significant for Calgary. So I'm inclined to think the Flames might do it. And out of the East, I kind of wanted to go with my boy Tico Napoli and think Rangers as well. But I could see the Hurricanes kind of putting it all together as well this year. So I'm thinking maybe a Flames Hurricanes final, and I'm going, I think the Stanley Cup drought is over for the first time since 1993 in the Montreal Canadiens. I think the Calgary Flames are going to win Stanley Cup.
Wow, Dave, I did not see that prediction coming.
Yep.
But
I didn't either.
I got Lanny McDonald's always kind of right here. So I'm, you know, Jim Poplinski, yeah. Joe Newendike, yeah. Kind of always love those 80s.
We're not going to say Jamie McCallum, though.
No, not after the
Mike Vernon, Rick Walmsley.
If I can get in on this, if you guys will be willing to entertain
my Jeff agrees with me, by the way. Jeff Cables.
Okay, there you go. Jeff says
it. I was in Calgary in 89 after they won the Stanley Cup. I remember how amazing the city was. Just wanted to get that in there.
Thank you. That's great insight for everybody.
Little 7-year-old Ezzy.
Yeah, that's good to know. That 7-year-old Ezzy was a sight to behold, much like 40-year-old Ezzy is a sight to behold, undoubtedly. I'm going to go with the New York Rangers to come out of the East. I look up and down that lineup last night, and I don't see a lot of warts. I don't see a lot of holes. Granted, I mean, they lost, no question about it. But you look at their last two games before last night.
It was just one game, though, Drew.
I know. That's okay. That's six now. So if you can see it another four times, we'll get the over. 60. Okay. You just look at that Rangers team, and I just don't see any holes in the lineup. I mean, they have probably, if not the best goaltender in the world right now, and one of the top three goaltenders in the world. They have world-class defensemen in Adam Fox and Jacob Trouba. You have a ton of scoring power that I think is only going to increase as Lafreniere and Kaapo Kakko get more and more comfortable as the year goes on. And I mean, you know, you mentioned Panarin off the top of the show, Ezzy, and Zibanejad and Chris Kreider, and they just have a wealth of talent up and down their lineup. So the Rangers to me are the team that's going to come out of the East. I don't know how you can bet against the Avs coming out of the West. I mean, the goaltending is the sort of unknown to me there, but I'm confident that it'll be fine. And then, you know, Cale Makar on your back end and Nathan MacKinnon.
Who won? Flames in Colorado. Just saying.
Okay. Well, thanks.
It was just one game, though.
I know. I appreciate you just saying that. To me, it's the Rangers and it's the Avalanche, but the Rangers are going to be the team that wins the Stanley Cup. So I think it's going to stay East. I considered Carolina. I love
it. All of our predictions sucked.
I considered Carolina. I just don't trust Freddie Anderson to step up to be at that level of the elite goaltenders when the going gets tough in the nitty gritty rounds of the playoffs. So that is my prediction. I'm sure that we will all be terribly, horribly wrong, and you'll remind us of that. Our friends in the chat will remind us of that as the season.
I really like LA this year. I'm just going to throw that in there. That was one other team that it was between LA, Edmonton, and Calgary. Shocker. And I'm just going to say, I think LA does win the division.
Okay. Put on your antlers. It's time for the Minook Moose Minute on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Hey, how did that happen?
This is Kenny's water bottle's fault, because if he hadn't said anything, you wouldn't have pressed the button.
Absolutely not.
And then we would have been able to get through the show without hearing Dave go on his self-indulgent rant for the next... You got 2.5 minutes.
Sorry, yeah. Drew. I'm just giving the people...
Fire coming from Mindell there.
I was like, you might have some fireball right there, Mindell, but the reality is that's what the people want. Look at Jeff. T-Kona, everybody's asking about the Moose, Drew. I'm just giving the people what they want. We give them tickets. We give them insight. That's what we offer here on this.
Love the afternoon game, by the way, Dave, to start the season. You don't see that very often.
Absolutely. And so it's, well, I mean, yeah, the Moose play some, but yeah, you're right. Not for the home opener. It'll be a fun, good atmosphere. 2:00 at Canada Life, downtown Winnipeg. I will be there. The press box will be a little bit more empty. I think there'll be one other guy covering the team. So it should be fun. And this team is stacked. I mean, whether it's Mantalainen or Holman net, you've got a young defensive core that's
Mantalainen. You mean Salmonen?
Salmonen. Sorry. What did I say? Mantalainen. It's all these Finnish names. Who can remember? So, but the real key is, you know, you've got Heinola and Chisholm. These guys are going to get an opportunity. Lundmark, 2019 second rounder. He's the guy that I thought really started coming to his own last year. And so he'll be a guy, especially now that the right side depth is a little less without Johnny Kovacevic. Leon Gavanka, he's looking to build. He had a bounce back year for the Moose. Tyrell Bauer, I know T-Kona Paul is going to be upset if I don't mention him, but he's a nice big boy coming from the Western Hockey League. He's another right side guy. So he'll bring some
oomph. Is he going to drop the mitts tonight, Dave?
He may. I don't know if he's in the lineup. Haven't seen that yet. So, and then Ashton Sautner, the Manitoban, from up near Flin Flon, he's going to be most likely the sixth guy on the left side for the Moose. So real exciting decor from a Manitoba team and the forwards. I'm not going to list them all, but like even just from a prospects perspective, Brad Lambert, Chaz Lucius, Daniel Torgeson, Henry Nikkanen, you know, you've got the old guards, you know, lots of skill. You got Dominic Toninato and Jansen Harkins coming down. You've got Kevin Stenlund coming down. So they've got a really good mix. Christian Reichel, you know, this is like Mikey Essiemont. Jeff Malott. I mean, like it really is kind of mind blowing how significant this Moose team is. And look, you know, the reality for the Moose are whatever happens to the Jets is going to impact the Moose. So, you know, if the Jets can stay healthy, of course, the Moose team can stay together. But
hold on, sorry to cut you off. Did you even mention Ville Heinola?
I did. Yeah, I mentioned him.
Okay.
I mentioned him. Talking about him with
You did mention him. Okay.
Yeah.
So I think I think that
continue on.
No, thank you. And look, I think really it's going to be those two guys are going to be playing a lion's share of minutes. But, you know, and we haven't even mentioned the lunch pail line, you know, Cole Meyer, Evan Poli, Nicholas Jones. This is why, like, I just said I wasn't going to name them all, but I mean, it's unfortunate. I can't get to everyone.
Bon Giovanni.
Exactly. Wyatt Bon Giovanni. I mean,
you've got saying that name.
There's the raw. Keep going, Ez. I just think it's going to be a lot of fun. I think fans are going to have a great time watching this Moose Club because it's going to be a great mix of developing players and veterans. And, you know, obviously Captain Jimmy Olney is out till Christmas. We broke that news in the summer, but
Jimmy's hurt.
Yeah, Jimmy is hurt. Jimmy can't jump right now. But so you don't have him. But, you know, I asked Mark Morrison about that, and he said, look, we've got so many leaders on this team that, you know, obviously Jimmy's going to play a role, but there's a lot of guys who are going to step up and fill that void while he's out of the lineup. And I just think that there's a lot of opportunity for these young guys to take that next step. So great place for Daniel Torgerson's, the Henry Nikkanen's, the, you know, Chaz Lucius's, the Brad Lamberts. Those guys could still, in theory, be assigned to the WHL because, you know, we saw it with Montreal. They assigned one of their prospects from Laval to, I think, the OHL. So that's always still a possibility. I don't think so much with Brad Lambert, maybe with Chaz Lucius. We'll see what happens there. But there's a lot of exciting things that's going to happen.
Portland has his rights, right, Dave?
Portland does, yeah. Oh. Yeah. Seattle has Lambert and Portland has Lucius. So we'll see what happens in that regard. But this Moose team is going to be fantastic to watch. So even if the Jets don't make the Stanley Cup Finals, I think there's a very good chance, especially with solid goaltending, that this Moose Club could be a Calder Cup contender. And so there's lots of reason to follow along. And we also have to mention quickly, first goal alert, Rutger McGroarty, the 2022 first rounder, scored his first goal, had his first multi-point game for the University of Michigan, who are 3-0 to start the season. I mean, he scored the ninth goal on a 9-1 win over Boston, but still you can see the excitement from the Jets prospect in scoring his first goal at the collegiate level. So lots of excitement coming up for Jets fans to watch.
There you go. The Manuk Moose Minute is no better way to wrap up this Saturday morning edition of the Illegal Curve.
Well, smashing the like button is always the thing. Leaving a comment on our iTunes, that's also a good thing.
Exactly. Leave a comment on
Napster as well, LimeWire.
Yeah, all those things. Exactly.
Check out my MySpace page too.
Big thank you to Dan Robertson. Big thank you to Mike Heike for joining us on the show. If you missed either of those interviews, they are immediately available on the YouTube replay, and Dave M will have the podcast up and running in no time flat. A big thank you to all the sponsors of Illegal Curve who make the post-game show, the Saturday show, and the website a possibility. Our friends at Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Tom Takar at Rumors Tonight. Two shows, limited tickets available. Get them now, rumorscomedyclub.com. Linden Market Dental Center, Zapia Group Realty, Betway, official sponsor of the Illegal Curve. Post-game show coming up Monday, 10:15 p.m. Central Time. Tough Duck, hardest-hitting comment. We gave away a toque last night. We'll give away another one on Monday. Boston Pizza, Seagram's, Rolly's Transfer, Grid Park, and The Keg support these fine businesses because of their continued support of Illegal Curve Hockey. Dave M. is in the top right. Ezra Ginsberg's in the bottom middle. I'm your host, Drew Mandel. If it's Saturday, it's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, live on YouTube and all of our social media platforms.
Thanks for listening to this broadcast from Illegal Curve Hockey. For more great Illegal Curve content, subscribe to the Illegal Curve YouTube channel, follow at Illegal Curve on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram, and visit your online home for hockey in Winnipeg, illegalcurve.com.